thought it was safe to turn on your radio.
Something fresh and exciting. Somebody with a sock personality that'll sweep people right off their feet.
Where is he? What is he up to? What other terrors can he unleash at will?
Starring your genial host, renowned writer, art collector, and teller of strange tales.
What fiendish power did he possess? Where did he come from? Who is this man?
What is up, everyone? This is the Shannon Burke Show, and as you can obviously tell, I am not Shannon Burke. He's taking a lovely, well-deserved day off today, so we thought we'd continue on. Didn't want to do the best of, so we thought, let's do a live show. I am Easy Eric Stacy, and we're just going to continue on doing normally what we would do. So with me, running the board today, and she's all smiles, which is kind of crazy, is the one that puts the heat in Heather, Double
Hello.
H. How are you doing today?
I am so happy to be here.
Oh, good.
This is
good,
my jam, right here.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You actually get to push the button today?
Mm-hmm.
You're not just staring off into the space like you normally do on the other side?
Well, I get to talk to, you know, a lot of the listeners when I'm on the other side.
That's good. We are going to still, we're no changes today. We're going to do the normal stuff. Next hour, top of the next hour, we'll still have Heather Has Answers. We'll have your remarks in between there. And we are going to have a special dark history as well. Heather has been working on this for, I don't know, like 2 weeks now.
Yes.
Pretty much, I get almost bugging me like every day. Like, hey, can you read over this? Can you look over this one?
You never looked over it, did you?
I looked over it. Yes, it's great. You're going to do fine.
Okay.
I trust you. So, and then we'll also, in the last hour, we'll have Movie Man Mike. And in between there, we'll have your remarks as normal. And if you love to, you can, you know, send as many of them as you in would like today. We'll try to play them all. It's Friday. We try to have a little bit of fun, try to get through the day. But we can't not talk about the fact that for some reason, Israel, Iran, they want to start a war, but they can't figure out how to do it. It's more, I don't know, it's almost like kids trying to poke each other. Like two kids in the back seat.
They're succeeding.
Not even that great. Really, it's all it is. It's like the U.S. right now is the parent in the front seat. And you're going, don't you do it. Don't do it. And they're going to poke
he
back.
He touched
and
me.
And that's basically what happened last night. Earlier in this week, Iran, they kind of did their retaliation for back on April 1st. Israel threw a couple bombs at a embassy for Israel or for Iran. And they were none too happy about it. They had to retaliate. So they launched a bunch. Iron Dome caught most of it. Also, the U.S.-U.K. ships took down most of it. So it was really no lost life. It was kind of like, they told us that was going to even happen anyway, so it really wasn't going anywhere. And then now it goes back to the other side, and Israel goes, okay, well, I guess it's our turn to do something. And so Iranian media and officials described what was considered a small number of explosions, which they said resulted from Iran's air defenses hitting three drones of the city of Isfahan. Notably, they referred to the incident as attacked by infiltrators, so not Israel. They wanted to make sure they specified. They told everybody, hey, these definitely wasn't from Israel, because there's no reason to actually retaliate now. An Iranian official, he told Reuters that there was currently no plans to respond against Israel for the incident. The incident has not been confirmed. They have not received any external attack, and the discussion leans more towards infiltration than attack. So, you know, we are just, we're weirdly on the precipice. Like, all right, we want to start a war. We want World War III. It's, you know, we can't help ourselves. We as a U.S., have to give a bunch of money to everybody and, like, hey, do our dirty work here. They did say Senior Army Commander Siavash Mihandust, he was quoted by State TV, saying air defense systems has targeted a suspicious object, and really there's nothing more to it. But back on Israel, they said, hey, we did our retaliation. We're done again. But not one of their guys, his name is Itamar Ben-Gvir. He's a hard right national security minister. He says they didn't do enough. Matter of fact, he actually posted onto X a word that is in Hebrew. I don't actually have it, but it loosely translates to scarecrow, but also translates to basically, he said, lame.
I think you should pronounce it.
It's in Hebrew, which I can't read. So
I think you should try. I'm kidding. It's okay.
It's not going to be make a lot of. It's Hebrew is a language that doesn't have the ability to look at it.
It's a little bit like Sanskrit.
Yeah, you can't. You know, Spanish. You can go. Okay, I quesadilla. It looks at least like there's all the letters that I normally use. When looking at that, it's just not one. Mr. Ben Gvir is the only member of the government to have spoken about the strike publicly, and he was quickly to condemn for simultaneously confirming the attack, which Israel themselves has officially not said, and also saying, hey, that was super lame. Again, they're really, we want war, and it's, I don't get it. I know that we have those tensions in there for years, and both sides can never seem to be happy, but man, maybe at some point people will figure it out. Oh, we had a pretty good run with the Abraham Accords during Trump's terms, but as you can see, we're back where we were before, back to, you know, poking each other with sticks. Now, if you're worried about us going to war here in the U.S., just to say, hey, we'll be fine here, because no chance of war, or the fact that, hey, for the first time in 40 years... the Pentagon is working on its first new nuclear warhead. Yes, the W-93 warhead will be used on submarine-launched ballistic web missiles and is being built with about $19.8 billion that was requested by the NNSA, the National Nuclear Security Association. This was actually according to Senate testimony by Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm. The W-93 is in the early phases of feasibility and is designed at the Los Alamos National Laboratory since May 2022 and is on track for production for beginning in the mid-2030s. So
we have to hold off having that World War III for a couple more years until it's ready.
You don't think we have enough already? This is the fact we're building new ones. We have so many that we have mothballed that we could end the world over and over and over and over again if we really wanted to. That old mutually assured destruction. The nuclear missile submarine forces will be scaled down from the 14 Ohio-class submarines to just 12 Columbia missile boats, but they're also modernizing five existing warhead types, the B-6112, the B-6113, and blah, 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 a couple other ones. Just more. We also have the B-61. It's a nuclear gravity bomb dropped by an aircraft carrier, and the newer variant will be built by 2025. I know you're super excited, aren't you?
I am. Let's do it now. No, I worry. I don't want bombs coming this way. Like, keep it all over there. And I know at some point, bombs are going to reach over here.
I'm a little worried that you're like, whatever, bomb everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, not here.
Are you also a war hawk too, as well, we're finding
out? No.
Yeah.
No.
I think you are a little bit. You enjoy that.
Death and destruction.
Oh, well, the House floor has decided to go ahead and vote to push to... go ahead and put to vote the new money aids given out to Ukraine and Israel.
More.
Yes. We've been a little while since we've actually been able to vote on it. Mike Johnson has for the longest time delayed that. They've sent one from the Senate over there. It's basically not gone anywhere. He, for the longest time, seemed to be on the side of saying, we're not doing this anymore. We're done. Just recently, though, I think mainly it's a lot of... threat from the Freedom Caucus people about having him removed. He's now kind of flipped. He's like, all right, whatever. I'll just go ahead and side with everybody, and we'll give Israel and Ukraine more money and more bombs and all that fun stuff. I can't take our side seriously sometimes when it comes to Republicans, especially the Freedom Caucus people. I mean, really, this is a part I can't figure out sometimes, is that I swear... the messaging is lost, and I agree with all the policies. The policies are there. The people that we have right now sometimes are just not getting the job done, and they're being very childish. It's very embarrassing. This week, actually, the House Freedom Caucus has formed what they've called the Floor Action Response Team.
What is that?
Well, just take a moment and think, what do those letters come out to be?
Fart.
Yes, the fart team.
That took me far too long.
The Freedom Caucus has formed a crack team of conservative lawmakers to monitor the House floor, lest Speaker Johnson or any Republicans try to limit their power. So what they're afraid of is that Mike Johnson, Speaker Johnson, is going to push through basically a change on being able to remove the speaker. Right now, it only takes one person to get the ball moving. You can pretty much get set up and kind of get it going with just one guy. That's how Matt Gaetz got... our last guy, Speaker McCarthy, out of there pretty easily? Is it really just one person? They want to change it so it's more people. It's far harder to remove the person. Basically, this fart group. The fart group. They want to make it so they have that still that power. The band of rabble-rousers that loves generating headlines has decided to call themselves the Floor Action Response Team, and that's not a joke. They are specifically calling themselves the Fart Team. The group makes sure that no other Republicans try to rush through changes that would make it harder for lawmakers to oust Johnson from power or that would strip the Freedom Caucus members, basically the power that they own. The publication reported that the Freedom Caucus did not expect any such maneuvers, but is remaining vigilant just in case their colleagues try to be silent and deadly in their cause. So much puns. I can't.
They're not taking it seriously.
Yeah,
they're calling it a fart.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a joke they are. That's what the problem is that they need to get together. There needs to be some
adults.
Adults, no, that's right. We've always considered, since I grew up, since the House, the Senate, those are our most respected leaders. Those are our representatives that we send to be our governing body. They are the people that we expect to be adults, and now we've got a bunch of people on the floor fighting about who gets to be in power. You're not doing what I want you to do, so this is that and that, and then we have the fart group. It's...
The world is laughing at us.
Yeah, I think there's some definite sometimes. Really, it's unfortunate because we have lost a lot of respect. And I don't know if that's a lot of this has come from the world we're in right now after the 2020 election. I think there has been a lot lost at that. We've allowed a lot of issues to fester and we've lost a lot of the adults.
Yeah, they keep trying to play nicer, but no. Yeah.
I got KJP's on the TV right now. I guess they're going to no comment on Israel's strike on Iran. Again, like I said, it's almost like they're throwing sticks at each other. Really, when you have a guy that's if it was really three drone attack, which I think Iran's a little bit turning it down a little bit on how actually intense the attack was. But there's not a lot of damage that I've seen from the pictures. So I think we are sitting on just...
So Israel only sent three drones?
That's what they're saying. They said that they hit three drones over the city of Isfahan, that the Iranian air defense knocked them down.
So that is like throwing sticks at each other. That's not going to do anything. That's...
Yeah, I think it is... We're so honor-based sometimes that... you have to go, okay, well, if you attacked us, we have to attack you. But it's so half-hearted already that they're going, okay.
You slapped me, I slap you back.
It's basically what's going on. We're on day three of the Trump trial. Well, actually, we're on the day four. We're still going through. They've got the main 12 sit. They're now going through backup jurors. There's a lot of things going on, including this right now. I guess this was kind of breaking news. Apparently, someone decided to light themselves on fire outside the courthouse.
Be fair and impartial. And also, there's a woman who gets her news from the New York Times and Google. She is from Chinatown. So for that reason, oh, we have a fire over here. Turn the camera. Turn the camera.
Turn the camera. Guys, there's a fire.
Oh, my God.
All right, there's a fire that has started, as you can see, live. We wonder if a person is on fire.
Themselves on fire.
In the fire. We apologize for showing this. Get a fire extinguisher. Do we have a fire extinguisher in the truck? Do we have a fire extinguisher in the truck? Connor, bring a fire extinguisher out. Anyone have a fire extinguisher?
They don't want.
We deeply apologize for what has happened. This man.
Eric, we're going to let you.
They're putting jackets over the body of this man. A man has set himself on fire. They have put jackets over him. They're now putting fire extinguishers to extinguish the fire. Someone has set himself on fire in the protest area here at the Donald Trump trial. Well, as you can see,
Well, that's a smart thing to do. if he lives. That's going to hurt really bad.
I saw the few moments that they turned the camera to him, which they immediately turned because they were like, hey, fire, fire, fire. So they thought maybe somebody had just set a trash can on fire or something like that. They turned the camera and yeah, that person is not surviving.
Were the coats to put out the fire or to cover the dead body?
Column A, column B, a little bit of one. Well, I don't know how you have to tell people that that's outside the, it's one thing if you're going to do is say, hey, it's a protest for whatever the genocide or again, setting yourself on fire is never a great way of protesting.
Nowhere to go from there.
It just, I guess it's the ultimate way to show your cause. You know, we always pick on people like the Vanderbilt guys that we had a hunger strike for a little while and we couldn't go to the bathroom, but we're definitely with all those people. The guy that lights himself on fire, he means it.
He does.
But this was outside of the Trump trial. What are you exactly protesting? Are you protesting the fact that he's on trial?
Yeah, which side is he on?
Are you protesting the fact that you're upset with him? It seems like a terrible idea either way because this is a trial for hush money. Basically kind of a sham trial in the first place. There's a lot of stuff going on that kind of questionable on how this works, but it's just not. I don't get it.
Yeah, so this isn't even like the political trial. This is just about the hush money with Stormy. So,
well, anything with him is political at this point. You can see it. Just go online for 5 minutes and look at the vitriol on both sides. This is a trial that everybody kind of feels is a sham. I think even the people on the left know it's kind of a sham, but they are so intent on like, all right, we got to get them this time. We're going to get them. And they're basically enjoying it. They're seeing this time where they're like, oh, this is the time we can finally punish him for everything he's done wrong. Hard to really figure out what exactly. Nobody can say what he's done wrong. Everybody's, oh, I just don't like the guy. Yeah, okay, well, go in there and tell me what policies you didn't like. Just because he was mean doesn't mean that there's somebody's not a good leader. You know, you have somebody that they say, oh, well, just he's so mean to everybody. The tweets were mean. You go, okay, well.
Cool. So don't invite him over to the barbecue.
Yeah.
Okay. I've said that all along. His policies were great. In office, he was great. Would I have him over if he was my neighbor? No.
You probably would.
I don't know.
You're a bit of like a neighborhood busybody anyway, though. So you'd probably want him over just to hang out, see what he's got going on.
I don't know. I don't know about that. But I mean, in office, he was fine.
You don't want to see like, hey.
I'd hang out with Melania.
Yeah, I knew you would. You're already friends with Giselle or with Fetterman anyway, so.
Yeah, it's impossible to get a hold of John though. I'm still trying to get him on. I'm still trying. He's not replying to my.
He's busy.
Yeah.
For some reason, changing all of his the way he was doing, he came into power when he took over a Senate seat was completely different, and now he's gone 180 again. To which I think you get a chance to really look at his policies, and he was always kind of moderate, and I think he played up being that full on left Democrat a little too much to try to get himself into office, and I mean he's a guy that got in trouble for firing a shotgun at a black man that was jogging in his town when he was mayor, so.
Wait, John did?
Yes.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah, he thought he was robbing his car or something like that.
But he just fired a shot in the air?
Yeah, he didn't hit him.
Oh, okay.
You would know
well,
that,
I mean,
yeah.
In that case.
If Fetterman killed a black guy, you definitely have heard that story.
I wonder if he would have put the date on his arm. You know, that's what he does. His arm is like covered with people that were murdered in Braddock, starting with Nyla. It was a little girl that was murdered there. But he's got his whole right arm is covered in dates. And it's just people who have died from gun violence in where he was mayor in Braddock, Pennsylvania. That's just a weird tidbit.
That is a weird tidbit. I don't know if I.
It's like he's honoring the people from the town that he was mayor.
Yeah, but has he stopped?
Stopped tattooing himself?
Yeah. Like, was it only when he was mayor? Like, that? I'm going to remember, everybody's going to remember, I'm going to remember the people that died while I was in office, or...
I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I have no idea, because I moved back down here, like, 5-6 years ago, so...
I mean,
it's been 6 years since I've seen him.
So his arm may be completely covered in numbers.
It, yeah.
Like some sort of memento, trying to remember things. All right, so we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to dip back into the Trump trial. We've got a list of some of the jurors. I love these descriptions they give of people, mainly because they're like the most offbeat things that they could come up with each person. One of them, he likes to do anything outdoorsy, and he lives in West Harlem, so... we'll get to that and so much more when we get back. It's the Shannon Burke Show. We're supposed to get in here an update soon on the guy lit himself on fire. So maybe we'll take that in a second just to take a look at it, just to see what the NYPD says. See if he made it back to the hospital before he's too crispy.
I can't find any pictures online yet.
Supposedly the video is out on Reddit. If you can look it up, I got somebody text me that I just haven't had a chance to take a look for it. If you, I mean, the Fox News one, they panicked too, because they panned over and they were thinking it was just like a dumpster fire or something. And you could see a human body and they immediately like kicked that camera away. So they were panicking a little bit. But I guess there's always going to be some drama outside a Trump trial, where they are on day four now. Of the hush money trial, the quote hush money trial. Couple things, highlights yesterday. Like I said, they got down to their final 12. They're working on alternates right now. They actually went from, it's actually quite amazing how quickly they've gotten this done. And I think Trump's lawyers have been a little upset about this. And then, I mean, they kind of were pushing like, hey, this is going really fast. And then they kind of backed up and said, okay, maybe we can use this to our advantage. Probably in like a possible some sort of appeal later on down the line, because it is going quick. I mean, you don't normally see in a trial like this for them to go through and have jurors set in 3 days. That's like a week, 2 week kind of thing sometimes.
Well, and especially with all the background information that they're looking up on each of these people. I mean, they're going through their social media and stuff. Like, is that done in a normal jury selection?
Yes, a good... a good lawyer should be looking at all that thing, especially social media now, mainly because when you want to be looking at it, one of the first things you want to do, let's say it's a murder trial. And one of the first things you want to do is go on there and look on X and go, OK, did Mary here? Did she? OK, here on this date, she said that he's absolutely guilty. He definitely murdered that woman. Very hard to kind of get an impartial juror when they've already stated on social media right. What they've made decided. They're like, yeah, he's dead.
Yeah,
he did it. Day three of the trial actually started with 96 prospective jurors, and they got it down to their final 12 almost immediately within the day. 48 of those potential jurors were dismissed after they said they could not be fair or impartial. I think this is one of the few trials that's kind of working in everyone's favor that does not want to be on a jury. When you have something that is as a polarizing figure that as Trump is, it's pretty easy to go in there and just be like, yeah, I can't. I can't make a fair and impartial decision. I think a lot of times you go and try that in jury duty, they're going to laugh at you, mainly because the pool is so much smaller. If you just go in there, well, I just can't be impartial on it. A lot of times they'll just laugh at you and they'll still make you go through the entire proceedings. They dismissed those impartial ones. Another 9 jurors were excused for other reasons as the prosecutors and lawyers were working to seat it. They did a couple of them. One potential juror who was a paralegal said, yes, I will be unbiased. I will be very impartial in response to the question. A couple other ones that they read his Art of the Deal. Like I said, they went really fast through it. They got down to it and they seemed to agree pretty quickly. They do say that during the most of the trial on Thursday that Trump was pretty bored. The only time he seemed to perk up is when they actually brought the potential jurors in. He kind of wanted to take a look at them then. And then the only other thing that he said is it's super cold in this courtroom to the point where it's like bothering everybody in there. Apparently, Manhattan courts can't figure out how to set their ACs properly. Numerous occasions throughout the day, the temperature in the courtroom was the topic of conversation. But the judge actually refused to turn on the heat. early in the day, lead attorney Todd Blanche approached Merchant and asked if he could make the court any warmer. Merchant did agree it was cold, but warned that turning up the heat could lead to a spike in temperature.
That's what heat does.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the temperature in the courtroom? Do they say?
They don't say. Later, Merchant even apologized to potential jurors for the chill, but said it was one extreme or the other. So either you're going to be hot or you're going to be cold.
Dress appropriate. Bring a jacket.
Trump could be heard telling his aide that it's freezing in there. Now, they have all the 12, and I love that they've kind of put together like a backstory for all 12 of these jurors. And some of them are just great. Juror B400, he's a man who lives in West Harlem, will take the seat of number one in the jury box. In his spare time, he likes to do anything outdoorsy. He lives with his spouse and has no children. One of the challenges of the defense team is to find jurors in liberal Manhattan who do not get all their news from New York Times or NPR. Juror B400 said he reads the Daily Mail and watches Fox News as well as the New York Times and MSNBC. So,
yeah, it's absolutely impossible to get somebody who would be completely impartial.
I love these because a lot of these look like dating profiles. B565, he's an investment banker and holds an MBA in finance. His spare time, he enjoys hiking, music concerts, and exploring New York City.
Swipe left.
He said he does follow Trump on Twitter. He also follows Trump former lawyer Michael Cohen and his podcast. Also the account Mueller She Wrote and news about Ukraine and Israel. He gets his news from the New York Times and has seen quotes from Trump's book, The Art of the Deal, but has not read it. B381, he's a man in his late 20s or 30s. He's lived in Chelsea for 5 years. He said he's a corporate lawyer who likes to hike and run. These are a lot of outdoorsy people in New York.
Where are they hiking in New York?
Central Park, or going outside the city.
Okay.
B374 is a black woman in her late 20s. The Harlem native is a teacher with a master's degree in education who described herself saying, "I'm a creative at heart who loves theater, writing, and traveling." Her dislikes are oysters and loud people at the theaters.
So this is a joke too, then.
It's just... it's like I said, it's hilarious. They really get into some of them. B639 is a retired wealth manager who lives on the Upper East Side who will sit in seat 8. He's married with children. His hobbies include a flight machine, skiing, yoga, and meditation, which he does every morning. I will say one of the things that they did really well on this, which is actually amazing that they pulled a jury pool like this out of New York, mainly because it's the entire city that you're pulling from. But you ended up with, let's see, one of these guys, he works in sales as a waiter, but there's a lot of people in here that are, there's a corporate lawyer, an investment banker, a teacher, a software engineer, a civil litigator, a guy that has, he's retired, but has multiple masters, a speech therapist. I mean, these are all well-educated, e-commerce company man, product development manager, and then a physical therapist.
So where are the common folk?
They didn't really get any. Like I said, it's very rare to see. I know, again, they probably weeded those out. They went pretty quickly through them. They probably looked at it and said, "Do you have a GED? Okay, well, we're going to mark
or
this
in."
Or they
had hardships babysitters.
But it's a lot of well-educated people, which is not something you normally typically see in a lot of jurors.
Do you think that'll help him or hurt him?
It really is how the opinions of people. I think a lot of people try to say, "Oh, well, the MAGA people are all inbred backwoods, Southern folk that don't know how to read and didn't graduate high school, and that's how they're enthralled." Really, it's not. It's a mixture of all. Really, there's people on both sides. I think you will still a lot on the left will say, "Well, I'm a college educated, and I have my master's," and that's how they kind of pretend like they know better than everybody else. When you're going, your master's was in liberal arts, though.
But it's a master's.
Yeah, it's a master's in liberal arts, or my master's is in literature, Scandinavian literature from the 1400s to the 1500s specifically. And you go, okay, yeah, that helps me in no way decide which political candidate I'm going to be doing. Actually, I'm going to immediately stop listening to you because you sound like a pretentious douchebag. We did have one of them, Henson Cabreras. He was the one that yesterday was removed. He's the guy that they kind of found out was formerly had a arrest in back in 1991 when Cabreras and an associate were accused of tearing down political campaign signs in Harrison, New York.
And that got him off of it?
It got him taken off because he was originally picked as one of them.
Okay.
I guess the prosecutors, not the defense, looked into it and found that I think they kind of felt that he was a possibility that would be a person that would make an appeal easier when you go back and you look at this jury was tainted. This guy, honestly, was
probably at January 6th.
Yeah. Well, no, he's on the opposite side.
Oh.
Yeah. He's a liberal. He does say that the majority of the signs belong to Republicans that he pulled down. So he is not a Republican in any way. He wasn't a I know a lot of people were trying to say, oh, well, he's definitely some sort of Republican plant. They put him in there. He was the guy that said that Trump is mysterious. He said that, where was the quote on that? Basically, he felt, oh, he was fascinating and mysterious. And that kind of, everybody immediately thought, oh, this guy must be a Trump supporter. He thinks he's fascinating, mysterious. Really, it doesn't look like that. It actually looks like he pretty much was a liberal or Democratic. But I think it is a lot of the prosecutors kind of found out about it. They're not exactly clear what prompted prosecutors to pursue the 1991 incident. The questionnaire provided to jurors required them to disclose prior encounters with law enforcement or the criminal justice system. At the time, he had been working with staffers to then New York City Mayor David Dinkins. So the odds of him being Republican were pretty low. He's upset about it, though.
I'm sure.
He said that surprised me. That really surprised me. When they brought him up to question, he said, wow, something else is going on here, but they decided not to take me, and that's it. What can I say? So I said, fine.
I mean, what could he say?
Oh, yeah. Cabreras was quoted as saying, everybody wants to look good and fair in front of the public, but they don't act fair. I didn't expect they were going into my history of 30 years and pull out something that even I didn't remember. I hate when people say that. You got arrested for pulling down protest posters or political posters. You remember doing that. That's not something you forget.
Unless he was on meth.
Well, I would hope so that while he was working for the campaign of New York City Mayor David Dinkins, he wasn't exactly pounding a bunch of meth. It was also in early 91, so it would have definitely been crack. It would have been meth. he actually says he called Merchant a cowardly judge. The whole episode left a bad taste in Cabreras' mouth and fully left him with concerns about Merchant's management of the courtroom, calling him a cowardly judge for allowing the prosecution to brandish these details from decades ago. He says, I feel sorry for the other jurors because if the way they treated me is any indication of how they're going to treat other potential jurors, I feel sorry about it.
He's worried that they're going to be, like, his feelings were hurt and he's worried that they're going to treat them badly and hurt their feelings?
I guess, yeah. He kind of really came out and was...
You sure bonded with them quick.
He was angry about being taken off this, which really kind of pushes to the point where, like, maybe this guy shouldn't have been there when he's so angry about being taken off of it. Yeah, he fought pretty hard, apparently, to be like, oh, he's a coward for taking me off there. And he's going to treat everybody else bad.
Well, then he has a passion and probably a bias.
Yes, exactly that. And also, most of the people that are on there don't want to be there.
Yeah, you shouldn't want to be there. You only make like $15 a day.
There's a bunch of them that are because just like, I don't know if you remember the girl that was on the grand jury for the one in Georgia. And she did that interview, I believe it was on 60 Minutes or... where she came out and she was like, I was so excited to see President Trump crown him out there. And I wanted to be the one that swore him in and tell him that we're charging him. That's a lady that enjoyed it. Most people to be on these trials for them would have no interest because one, you're going to get hounded to death after this. They barely know anything about these people and they know a lot of stuff about these people they shouldn't know. They had the juror yesterday.
Their dating profile.
Yeah, basically. I'm surprised you don't know what type of STDs they have or their blood type or anything like that. But that'll all come out later on.
Yikes.
So, yeah, most people are just like, hey, I don't really want to do this.
Plus,
I'd rather go to work.
In a trial?
Yeah.
And they're so boring. I mean, you get tidbits of really cool information, but like the long stretches are so tiring.
That's why I keep laughing that every time they bring up Trump keeps putting his head down to rest. I don't know about you, sitting in a courtroom.
A cold courtroom.
Cold courtroom for 8 hours where they're not talking to you. In fact, they don't want you to talk. They don't want you talking to your lawyers. They don't want you looking like you're possibly intimidating the jury in any way.
You certainly can't play games on your phone.
He's actually been admonished twice now for taking his phone out because he tried to take a phone call. Again, that's just
was
a
dumb.
That's
not
sometimes
his finest.
I think you just don't think about it when you are a person with that type of power in your entire life. You don't think about like, okay, that somebody's calling. Let me look to see who it was. He probably just should have had his phone put up.
Have you been called for jury duty?
I have actually within the past year, which I kind of got lucky in because originally I had moved and changed some stuff. So they sent me jury summons and it just never got to me. And then I got it.
And then there was a warrant.
Yeah. Well, no, I got about 6 months later, I got another one that said, hey, you either show up for this one or we're going to come pick you up.
Well, okay. That was nice. They gave you warning. Yeah. I always worry that, there's no warning. You just... Yeah, but they've got more important things to do than arrest people for not showing up for jury duty, I would hope.
For jury duty in Volusia County.
Yeah.
On something that probably wasn't even some sort of capital murder or anything like that.
My husband keeps wanting to get on jury duty, and I'm the one who keeps getting called but keep getting out of it.
Yeah, so the first time, actually, I take that back. I got one about 10 years ago. I got the letter, but I did the whole call, and whatever number you had, if it wasn't in that grouping, you don't have to even show up. So I got that one.
Oh, I've had to show up a few times.
Yeah, I did show up the last time, and I made it through the first break they took. They went through. They called a bunch of people back. We're going through picking jury members. I was probably in group three. So they got through group one and half of group two. They took a lunch break, and they said, hey, you got to come back. We'll give you an hour. Of course, the courthouse I was at was about 40 minutes away from where I lived. So I'm like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to go wander around town here and see what I can find here in downtown DeLand. Came back and then I was there for like another 20 minutes. And they said, all right, you guys can go home. We got them out of the first set of groupings. Have you actually had to sit in one?
No, I have
not. So you've wanted to though, haven't you?
I think it'd be interesting and I do see it as a duty. So I would do it. But I don't think I want to. That's a long day, and I can't sit still.
Yeah, I know that. Cause I've seen that plenty of times. Yeah. I don't know how you would handle doing that.
No.
You've got two daughters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well. I know your son's in sports. I don't think you said your daughters really haven't. Well, your youngest is kind of getting into it.
We've done cheer, we've done gymnastics, we've done years and years of dance, but my mid kid is taking some time off. My youngest is doing t-ball.
Okay, so have a future possibly of staying in sports, going possibly.
I hope
into,
so.
Yeah, I mean, get your
sports is good.
Get him a softball scholarship. It's great for to get him into college.
She likes baseball right now, so we'll see.
Well, of course, Biden had to take Title IX, which has had its issues before. Basically, it was kind of designed to make sure that college sports, high school sports, that the men and women were on the same playing field. Not that they were playing in the same field, but that the female sports got the same amount of attention the male sports got. I know a lot of high schools have had to adjust to that because if you had a certain sport in males, you had to have the counterpart in female or an equivalent. Like you had to have, they had to be even numbers.
Right.
So if you had 10 male sports, you had to have 10 female sports, no matter what they were.
Even if no female wanted to play them.
Well, you'd have to figure something out for them. Those are the ones where you end up with like a female wrestler that's wrestling in a higher weight class than she would and wrestles with boys. But of course, the old LGBTQ has stuck their head into it. And they want to make sure that, according to with the new Title IX rules that have taken effect today, some good stuff. They're basically boosting the rights of sexual assault victims. We'll see how that pans out. I'm always for taking the victim's opinion on it. You always kind of have to start by believing the victim. There's too often we found now that it is possible the victim has lied as well. We've seen too many now recently people that have been Trevor Bauer, who was a pitcher in baseball. He had a bunch of issues with that. Had a girl that said he raped her, beat her, found out that he was just into really, really rough sex and she was into it as well. But it basically kind of ended his career. It's happened to a couple other people, but it is always kind of good that they at least the universities have to look into it. You know, if a football player gets called out for it, they need to look in like, hey, just because he's the best player in college football doesn't mean that he didn't possibly rape this girl.
Right.
But one of the other ones that they have done is that they have also raised expectations of schools across the country by requiring them to quickly respond to all types of sex-based discrimination, not just sexual harassment, which is the current threshold. So sex-based discrimination leads to making it by your gender and not the one that you were born with, the one you feel like you have. Basically, this is going to, under today's regulations, schools will have to do enough to end sex discrimination, giving complete effect to the Title IX guarantee that no person shall experience sex discrimination at the school. This will not quite yet lead the way to allowing born males to compete in female sports across the board, but pretty much sets the way for it. Setting stone definitions that will protect people who identify as queer and transgender from harassment or discrimination in any school that receives federal funding, including it being going by the gender you believe you are and not the gender you were born. Which, just awesome. At some point, I'd like to see a definitive ruling on it so people can finally make their mind on it. You can have a bunch of people that can finally decide, hey, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. You're going to find a lot of people that are going to have to, a lot of parents are going to have to make these decisions on if they want their daughters competing in this. I think you've seen it over and over recently that a lot of parents are starting to stand up and say, no, we're not going to do this. I'm going to take my daughter out of this area. We're not going to play in this tournament. We just need to finally figure out. Let's get a ruling down on it. I think it's a little silly that of all the things we're going on right now, that this is exactly what he needed to get into right now. Basically, that they say that this is a green light to ignore sexual violence and strip survivors their rights was how the predecessor worked. It really didn't. But they're just trying to shore up something that really didn't need to be shored up. Basically, this is another Trump-era policy that they're trying to reverse because of the fact that Trump made it so that the males that were being accused had some rights as well. So that they had the ability, again, to defend themselves. It wasn't a, I'm her word and only her word, and that's the end of it.
Well, they should be allowed to defend themselves.
Originally, the way it was written was not. It was really written way loose to be basically, if she accused you, you're out. We are taking her word for it. Trump came in, did some adjusting in Title IX, basically kind of gave the helped the rights of the people accused of sexual assault on campuses. And Joe Biden, I guess that was one of his running things that he was talking about that when he actually campaigned on was going to be able to fix it. Now the colleges will be able to use a lower standard to find someone guilty of sexual misconduct. Just hit after hit. He's doing such a great job right now. Don't you love it?
Love it.
All right. We have to take another break. When we come back, why are the parents of the victims of the Nashville shooting so intent on keeping the memoirs away? Actually, they were in court yesterday to, I have to explain a little bit. Basically, they've earned the copyright to the memoir. And they want to be able to keep it out of going out into public. Weirdly enough, that somehow they got the copyright of it. They're trying to stop it. They won't explain still why they don't want it. They just try to say, well, it's just kind of opening old wounds. But there is a lot of stuff that a lot of people have said it would reveal more detail about the killer's motive. And then to go along with that, there is a lucky enough we seem to have stopped another school shooter this time. It is another transgender one. We'll have more details on that. This is the Shannon Burke Show here on the Florida Man Radio Network. Yes, this is the Shannon Burke Show. Shannon is taking the day off. He's enjoying a little time. I head back to Texas for a little, R&R. He needs it every once in a while. Deserves it. But next Friday, him and I will be out at Leesburg Bike Fest. We'll be out there the Friday. Come on out. Come out and see us. It'll be April 26th through the 28th in downtown Leesburg. If you want to stay afterwards, Friday nights, Low Cash is playing. Saturday, Sugar Ray. I know everybody is super excited to see some Sugar Ray.
So he's actually going to be there. You're going to get to see him?
I don't know if he'll be there Friday. Okay, we'll see Locash. Yeah. And then Frankie Ballard will be there Sunday.
I kind of want to go for that.
Frankie Ballard?
I love Frankie Valli. My mom used to have a tape that we would listen to on every road trip.
Are we talking about this? You said Valli. It's Frankie Ballard.
Oh, wrong one then.
Yeah, that's why I was a little surprised. I didn't think you were a big Frankie
Ballard. Frankie Valli still touring?
No, I don't think he is. Well, I don't know. I'd have to look that up to see if he is touring. But no, it's Frankie Ballard.
Okay, I don't know who that is, but I'm sure he's fantastic.
Country guy. So come on out there. All the bikes out there. It'll be vendors. You can do enjoy it. We'll be live out there Friday in our normal time slot.
And I'll be right here.
Yeah, you get to push buttons on that day too. Two Fridays in a row, you get to push buttons.
It's my day.
I know, it's killing it. All right, so what is going on still with the Covenant Christian School shooter? They're still not releasing the manifesto on that, and they're fighting for it. The parents that have gotten a hold of it now. So what ended up happening was the parents of the shooter, which we don't need to talk about anymore, mainly because they don't need their name out there because that's what they want. But they were able to, they got control of the manifesto because the parents of the shooter went ahead and gave the estate rights over to the parents of the victims. So they own everything that belongs to that shooter, be it their car, their writings, all that stuff. So what they're arguing is that all of this memoir stuff is basically considered the same as if it was a writer. Let's say Stephen King dies and you go in there and the estate owns all of his writings, even though if depends on who he gave it to, but his estate owns all the writings. They're trying to say, well, this memoir follows under that because we're executor of the estate now. So we basically now get to we get to decide when it gets released, if it ever gets released. But a Tennessee judge on Thursday is attempting to determine if Hale's estate can assert a posthumous copyright claim over the handwritten confession and stop the information from being released.
That is even crazy. That's just crazy that you can copyright someone else's work.
Yeah, like I said, they've gone a really long way to get around to this, actually getting estate rights so they can go ahead and go ahead and lock it down. It's not going to happen. I don't see it happen. I think the judge is going to side with him. I'm not 100% sure if they have yet. So I know he was waiting to give his ruling still.
So that won't be released?
So it won't be released, correct. Okay. The city police and FBI say that the material shouldn't be released because the information can damage any potential investigation. I don't know what they're still investigating.
He still says he's innocent, right?
Well, he's dead.
Oh, okay.
They are dead. That's gotcha. The Nashville one. Yep. I did learn some other stuff about this. There were notes that definitely planned to target what they said were white privileged crackers and the F word for gays before turning the gun on themselves. There was also a couple other things that really they wrote, God, let my wrath take over my anxiety. It might be 10 minutes tops. It might be 3 to 7. It's going to be quick. I hope to have a high death count. Also, one of the things that I didn't see originally is that autopsy revealed that the person's clothes was covered in handwritten words, drawings, and numbers. And it's unclear what those things are that were written all over them.
I mean, kids write on themselves all the time. It might not have meant anything.
Also, the shooter wore a plastic orange anklet inscribed with the number 508407.
Like a cool AM.
I mean, nobody seems to know what those exactly are.
It's an Easter egg. We have to decode it.
Oh, I hate Easter eggs. I don't want to have to go through all that.
Yeah, I just think that person.
We've seen so often that all the other shooter manifestos are out before a lot of times that the person's been caught. Sometimes
they're proud of them
in Maine. They had that guy's. They had all the other ones. This one, they're proud of that one. They left it in their car. They wanted to be caught. You don't write a manifesto unless you want it to be read.
Yeah,
it's really a waste of time. Otherwise, you're like, I'm going to write a manifesto and then I'm going to bury it and burn it. It's a waste of time. Lucky enough, there was another possibility of a mass shooter, and this one seems to have been possibly stopped, except there's a little twist to this one. This is 18-year-old Alex Yee, whose legal name is Andrea Yee. Alex is a male-presenting born female. Was arrested Wednesday after law enforcement were alerted to a 129-page memoir that they allegedly authored that included descriptions of shooting up both a high school and an elementary school.
So it's a memoir and a manifesto, the same thing?
No. Well, here is what Alex is trying to do.
Okay.
Or Andrea. We're going to give them Andrea because you're a scumbag that threatened to shoot children, so I don't get to use your name that you want to use. So Andrea here had all these thoughts in their head, and they wrote it down, but they wrote it in a way that they could excuse it if they got caught.
Like a fictional story.
Exactly. Andrea described the writings as a piece of fiction, and it featured a disclaimer as such, including that it doesn't represent the author's beliefs. A witness whom Yi shared the writings with contacted authorities in early March because the witness said the writing bore striking similarities to the person. So when you write a book about how you would shoot up a school, you have to change up the character. You're not writing a book. You're writing your dirty fantasy thoughts that you have. The witness also believed the writings indicated that he was prepared to carry out a mass shooting imminently in the court documents state, and Yi later described the writing as their memoir. The supposed memoir, quote, was about a transgender man character named James Wang, who was being bullied in school and other issues, and believed were directly from parts that Yi was experiencing in their life and was not indicative of fiction. The writings include detailed descriptions of how the character would carry out a shooting, saying he would cherry-pick the classrooms that are the easiest targets. The character also allegedly states, "I have also considered shooting at my former elementary school because little kids make easier targets."
Monster.
This is a person, when we talk about mental health issues, that we need to make sure that they get off the street. This is one of those people because there's more to this. This person, this isn't the first time. Back in December, Andrea allegedly wrote to another user, "My homicidal ideas have gotten much worse lately to the point that I might act on it eventually." Added another message, "I want to kill a lot of people or it wouldn't be worth it." Lucky enough, it does not seem that Andrea had possession of any firearms, but they, you know, it's a little tough to have to go through and look for that.
What in the world happened in her childhood that would make her become this creature?
Mentally unstable. There are people that are mentally unstable. This is a person that is mentally unstable. Actually, Montgomery County Public Schools said that Andrea is an active student at Wooten High School, school in Rockville, but has been attending through a virtual program and hasn't physically attended since late 2020. According to court documents, Andrea was previously hospitalized for threatening to shoot up a school.
And so how did she get out of that hospitalization? What were the criteria that were like, oh, okay, now you're cool to let go. Go home now.
They were evaluated at their home and then hospitalized again in March. Shortly after the police investigation began as part of an emergency evaluation petition, the court records show that the hospital raised an alarm with school and law enforcement officials because of the threat posed by Andrea Yi.
So her parents were well aware that this was her intention. They had to have been if they had already locked her up for it at different times.
Definitely that they were having these thoughts, that Andrea was having these threatening homicidal thoughts. Counselhood worked with Yi, told authorities that they would often express violent thoughts such as shooting up at school and would smile while saying it. That's a person that doesn't need to be on the streets. I'm all for putting people to be reformed. But the way our system works now, really, it's very difficult to get a person put into mental health care for a long time. They give too many rights. Not the right word to say too many rights, but they give the person that is suffering from these mental situations a lot of rights, which, I don't know, maybe too many. Basically, when you can Baker Act a person, but you can only hold them for so long before they can basically say, "I'm fine, I'm going to go home." A lot of the places you have to go through like 2-3 psychiatric evaluations before they can hold you. Otherwise, you can walk up to the front desk, say, "I am perfectly fine, I'm out the door."
And I will sign that AMA. That's messed up.
Yeah, it really is. This person can walk out. Lucky enough, there are laws about this person getting a gun. It seems like that has so far maybe worked.
Yeah,
but it's also very easy.
Criminals get guns. It doesn't have to be legal.
We didn't have a chance to talk about it yesterday, but I guess one of the new trends is because cops are kind of keeping an eye on Facebook Messenger for selling guns in the Facebook Marketplace. It's a little harder now. You don't have Craigslist anymore. It used to be really easy to go on Craigslist and be like, "All right, I'm going to meet you up in a parking lot and just we'll trade guns or whatever." They've kind of stopped that, but the new trend is to do it on Tinder. I guess because the cops aren't looking. So I don't know what you'd exactly put on your profile. If you're like male looking for G, if you're like male looking for gun or
M4G.
Yeah, M4G, female F4G, looking for AR.
Huh. That's brazen.
All right. Enough of that. I think it's time to see what people problems they have decided to share with us today. Heather, let's go ahead and do Heather Has Answers.
All right. And I'm glad that none of these people have that kind of problem. Because I don't think we'd have the answers to be like, lock them up. All right. Dear Heather, names have been changed to keep our secret. So me, my friend Jack, and my friend Diane are in a bit of an odd relationship. Ever since we first started talking as a trio, we've been very tactile with one another, cuddling, sleeping in each other's arms on many occasions. We joked about how we were a troop, almost kissing multiple times, especially Diane. The situations were less common with Jack, but still very intense. I think I started developing feelings for them. About 2 weeks ago, they started getting a bit distant with me, and today I learned they started dating. I basically had to force it out of Diane. I told her that I thought we were something like best friends and that I didn't understand why she didn't tell me. She said she thought I'd be angry. I told her I was happy for them, but when I came home, I broke down in tears. I don't know what to do. I hope our friendship isn't going to be destroyed, and I can't imagine being friends with them like this. Jenny in Winter Springs.
Ah,
did
so...
you not know that things like that might happen? That was rude of me. I'm sorry, Jenny.
Well, I mean, did Jenny think this other Diane, right? Yeah, you said Jack and Diane. Right, immediately took John Cougar.
Yeah.
Did she think that Diane was, like, swaying that way?
Yeah, because Diane kept trying to kiss her, or had apparently almost kissing multiple times.
Yeah, but never went through. Maybe Diane's one of those college sorority girls that, like, hey, I want to try it out just to see if I like it type of girl.
And just drunk.
Just drunk. It is cute when all the guys clap when we do it.
Well, Jenny, in Winter Springs, maybe you should try The Villages. I know you might be a little young for that. Maybe they like them young.
I mean, it just might have been the fact that, you know, both Jack and Diane were feeling it out. I think she seems definitely, Jenny is more hurt that Diane left. So I think that maybe she was more feeling her lesbian side this time and not so much her... I mean, she could have been going for that throuple.
Or if she was just best, you know, feeling like she was best friends with Diane and they were also, you know, really good friends. Like, it can hurt anyways when a girl leaves the female relationship. It doesn't, I mean, even if they weren't about to kiss, like just having a friend that goes off and kind of ghosts you.
Yeah, but they could have been happy. He didn't say they ghosted him. They just said they started a couple.
She started getting a bit distant. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's new couple.
Right.
I mean, really, when have you not had a friend that just started dating someone and you're like, okay, guy, where have you been lately?
Oh, yeah, I have one of those now.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's because she's dating. I love you, Melinda. All right. Okay.
Yeah, I think Jenny just needs to talk to Diane. Say, hey, I had feelings for you. Was there any feelings or is it just a friendship thing? Can we still hang out? Can we be friends? Maybe be supportive of Jack and Diane. Be a good friend.
Yeah, yeah. All right, this next one. Oh, I had to, like, edit this.
I'm worried already now.
Yeah, okay. I think I'm addicted to validation from sexting with online women. This is a bit embarrassing. I don't even know where to begin, so sorry if the post is incoherent, and sorry if I've removed things that make it even more so. Lately, I've been sexting with women and giving them my all. I always ask if they'd let me call them mommy, if they'd call me a good boy, etc. But it makes me feel so depressed when sometimes they disappear immediately after I send them a video. I always ask if they like it, and sometimes the woman says yes, but sometimes she doesn't reply. Even one word answer yes would make my day. God, typing this out makes me feel like a puppy. How do I sort out this issue? What do I do to not feel so depressed when I don't get the validation? Is something seriously wrong with me? Anonymous. Yeah, you don't need validation from all these women.
That's not so much a validation. This guy has a kink.
Oh, so you need to find a girl that's got the same kink.
Yeah, he seems to have some sort of mommy issues. He specifically both times said about how he wanted to call them mommy and them to call him a good boy. So he definitely has a fetish for that. He's got some sort of mom issues. And that is something that is tough to go into the bedroom and tell a person. You got to find a special partner that's kind of into that type of thing with you.
So when someone just randomly calls you mama, do they have a mother issue?
They could. They could be someone that's their fetish. They want to be, what is the...
That always makes me uncomfortable.
What is it called? It's it's like adult baby little, or adult domination baby little, or something like that. There's a kink that they basically, they want to be pretending like they're babies.
Well, he's not doing baby things.
Yeah, but he's online doing it. He's trying to get validation from that. It's not, what's the video he sent? That's where he's like, did you go through all this thing where you're talking, you seem to be really kind of having a fun role play chat, and then you decided to send her a video of you whacking off?
Yeah, so see, when you send an unsolicited video or picture, she's not going to reply because no woman wants that.
You sure?
Yes.
Men have been trying this for years. I think we'd figure it out by now that...
We've been telling y'all for years.
It has to work. We keep doing it. There's got to be somebody that's there.
When we say we don't mean we. I'm not sending pictures. I'm not receiving pictures. Thank you.
But I you know what this always is? Is it reminds me that there's the one guy that this worked with. He's like, yeah, I sent a picture over to the girl I liked, and she liked it, and it worked. So now every guy around is like, I got to try it. Let me just send it.
She was born a man.
Yeah. No, I sent her a picture of my dong, and she was enthralled, and she said, let's get married. It's worked like one time like that. And that since then, everybody guy is going to like, all right, I got to try it. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, stop trying, guys. That's gross. Nobody likes that. They don't. Not anymore. Anyway.
You got one more?
I do. Okay. My ex says he wants me back because I'm tighter and slimmer than his current girlfriend who carried two of his kids. We dated and broke up when we were teenagers, and then completely no contact. He moved and onto his current girlfriend. They've been together for several years and have two kids together. They're 4 and 2. We're all in our late 20s. Last week, he messaged me a picture of myself at work and said he had missed me and was shocked to see me. I didn't even see him walk past the window. And then he sent me this huge paragraph, and when I didn't reply, about how my new hair color makes me look hotter and that I'm slimmer than his girlfriend and must be tighter since I haven't had kids, how he hates that she doesn't have glasses or play games with him. Like, he just sees me as some easy-to-get girl or something, some messed-up vision he created in his head. The worst part is he said he wishes his kids were mine. Problem is that me and his girlfriend hate each other because she used to bully me in school. I sent her the screenshots, and she accused me of AI generating them. Now I've got an angry woman getting all of her friends to message me horrible things, and a man that's a pathological liar getting away with it. And I don't know what to do. Christina in Central Florida.
Yeah, Christina, you're on the right on this one, 100%. Ignore this guy. Go ahead and just block his messages. Don't even accept it. And you might want to consider like the starting stages of some sort of restraining order against this guy.
At least get a report done.
Yeah. Because if he's outside your place of work taking pictures.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's very
weird.
Unless
she's like a bank teller.
It's still. it's weird to do that to anybody. Yeah, especially without. You could have popped in like, hey, it's been a while. I haven't seen you in forever. You don't snap a picture and send it to her like, hey, it's been nice. I haven't seen you in a while. Also, this guy is just a scumbag.
Yeah, he is. He doesn't want his girlfriend because she's not as tight and slim as this new girl. Like, or this old girl that he's known. Like, that's just rude. You are the reason she's like she is. She carried your kids.
Yeah, that's also gross to send that to somebody like that, too. Like, that's the on the line of sending the junk pics. You don't send to somebody like, hey, I bet you're much tighter than my wife is.
Ew.
Okay, that's, that's really going to get her going.
Yeah, there was something else about this I forgot. And then his current girlfriend that has his two kids was mad at this girl for sending the screenshots.
Yeah, I can't blame her because of the fact that she is...
Siding with her boyfriend?
She's siding with her boyfriend.
A dick?
He may not be to her. He may be the nicest guy, but he's... there's people that have the axe. You've met them before, the person that You've seen them with their significant other, and you think they're the best couple ever, and then you get one of them, the other one separated, and you find out that those two people are together.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So it's possible, but also she doesn't want to believe it. That's more, I think it is, not so much that she's siding with him. It's not, in her mind still, she hasn't kind of processed it to the point where she's like, I can't believe he would do this to me. I'm the mother of his two kids. Why would he say all these mean things about me?
Yeah. No, you're right. All right.
Well, thank you, Heather.
And if anybody would like to send me any emails so we can pick apart your problem, heatherhasanswers@gmail.com.
Ta-da! I don't have the sound bites with me, so I can't help you. I know it sucks. Chipped. I'm sorry. We'll give you double next week on Monday. I'll have Shannon give you two button pushes, so you get two ta-das, ta-das.
I mean, if you had told me you didn't have it or didn't have it, I could have pulled one up.
Probably. I know.
I've got lots of fun sound effects I've added over the years.
There are a lot of Jonathan sound effects, though. A lot of trailer start and cowboy sounds. Did you stay up last night to enjoy the giant Taylor Swift announcement?
I did not, but that was the first thing I checked this morning. I'm kidding. But it was the first thing that was on the news this morning.
My God, this thing is like all over. Honestly, it was a lead on so many news sites. It's hilarious to see that we have all this other stuff going on. We've got attacks in Iran. We've got Trump on trial.
So we need the pretty glitter.
And then the very top thing. It was like news headline number three down, but the very top was Taylor Swift releases her new album. It is named The Tortured Poets Department. Okay. It's a kind of a sappy name.
Apparently it's all very, very heartfelt and sad. And I'm hoping there's some upbeat songs. I got a dance party to attend tonight in my living room with a whole bunch of little girls.
Some of the super fans, they got a little upset. They accused of her trying to con them by dropping 15 new tracks at 2 a.m. So I guess she released the album and then just said, hey, by the way, it's actually a double album. There's two sets of two of them on there. She wrote on her ex that it's 2 a.m. surprise. The Tortured Poets Department is a secret double album. And then with a little two emoji.
I wonder if it's in one CD case or if it's an expanded CD case or if you have to wait another week or two to get the second part of it. I mean, I can let you know tonight when I get home, but
apparently it is going to be a second part. Despite already splashing out for multiple versions of the record in a bid to get their hands on all four bonus tracks, apparently you got to get a bonus track from buying it from multiple places. She's become a giant cash cow. I mean, not that she hasn't always been, but...
all these little Easter eggs that she's done.
Yeah, so you had to
hear about them all night long.
You had to get multiple versions just to get the four bonus tracks, but now fans will have to part with even more hard-earned cash when the supersized record goes on sale.
Yeah, so originally, the one album, it was only $14. Why did I picture music costing so much more than that? It's been a long time since I've bought a CD.
Do you want to take a guess on how much this is all going to cost you?
$30 if there's two CDs.
The deluxe version is not yet available for Taylor's website. There are four different versions of the original album available, each containing a different bonus track priced at $17.38. So you need to buy four sets of $17.38 to get the special one. The vinyl version, including the bonus track, The Manuscript, costs $42.23, while
that's a deal.
A Phantom Clear vinyl is the same price. It's unknown quite right now exactly what the deluxe version is going to cost you because it's not yet up on the website. But if you were to get all of them all together, you would be cashing out with a nice $174 to...
Yeah, the one album's enough. I mean, unless they're different album covers.
I don't know. Yeah, you're wrong on this because if you had even tried to listen to So Long London yet... Yeah, it's the first track to be written with the Nationals' Aaron Dessner... Brings a change of pace with a lovely choral intro. So Long London, you'll find someone sings Taylor. This printout I had has every track and every, I'll write up every one of them. It's ridiculous, people.
A choral intro?
Yeah.
Like a choir?
Yes.
I was thinking either the color or the sea. I was like, how did she pull that off? Because I bet she could, but.
Yeah, if you buy the album, Taylor comes to your house and punches you in the face at least one time, but she won't tell you when it's going to be. All right, we need to take a break.
All right.
When we come back, it is going to be time for your remarks, so you have plenty of time to still get those in. It's Friday. Have fun. Really, go ahead. Go hog wild. I honestly don't care. As long as it can be said on the radio, go nuts with them. We'll play them all. Also, Boeing, there's another whistleblower. He alleges that the criminal cover-up about the 737 MAX blowout is 100% happening. And also, U.S. Court of Appeals say that cops can now use your thumb to unlock your phone against your permission. So
No. Just
think about that. It's the Shannon Burke Show here on the Florida Man Radio Network.
I'm Florida Man Radio.
Welcome back. It's the Shannon Burke Show. Yes, and Shannon is not here today. That's right. He's enjoying some time off. But we're going to get your remarks here in a second. Before that, though, you know, I'm not a person that likes to go on the plane. Are you a person that likes to fly?
I do. I don't get to do it very often. I actually don't do it at all anymore. But, yeah, I hate driving in the car.
See, I like that. I can do a road trip. I can do a 12-hour road trip, not even, you know, without a problem. It doesn't bother me at all. I like it.
Nope. I get bored, and I get scared that I'm going to, like, fall asleep and crash.
See, that's why you undo all the windows, you put the sunroof up, out, and then you just turn your music up as loud as you possibly can as you drive down the road.
Yeah, no, I could do that in my house, and that still doesn't sound like fun.
Well, getting into a tube filled with people full of diseases that may or may not blow apart is not fun for me either. And apparently, more and more that comes out, there are some big issues going on with the Boeing 737 Supermax. Actually, they have a new whistleblower. His name is Ed Pearson. He's a former Boeing manager, and he testified that he... So there's arguments going on right now. Basically, that he was one of four people who testified Wednesday in front of the Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. Pearson was a senior manager at Boeing 737 factory and retired in 2018 before the first MAX 8 crash.
He got out in time.
Yeah. I think he knew there was some issues going on. He has consistently raised concerns that the narrow body jet is unsafe. And actually says he once got off a 737 MAX when he realized that he got on. That's what the plane was. So he was like, yeah, I'm out of here. Time to get off. When the former manager of it goes, I need to get off this plane, get me off now. If I find out it's a Boeing 737 Supermax, I am also. It's still going. A lot of this is going with that Alaska Airlines crash where the door plug blew off midair. It left a gaping hole in the fuselage. The National Transportation Safety Board said the key bolts designed to secure it were missing. So the NTSB said the door plug had been removed in Boeing's factory to fix some broken rivets. But Boeing says, hey, we have no idea when that happened. We have no documentation on it.
Put it back on.
Yeah, we didn't do that. We have no idea what happened with it.
How long was it flying without it? You know, they don't know.
They're not sure.
That's amazing.
Pearson says, though, that with respect to documentation, if the door plug removal was undocumented, there would be no documentation to share. Actually, that was from Boeing. So they said, somebody removed it. They fixed it. Somebody forgot to write it down. We have no clue. Pearson goes, the records, though, do in fact exist because I know this. I personally passed them on to the FBI. Pearson better be watching himself. He's also going to end up in a airport parking lot with bullet wounds. All of that other guy that was also the Boeing whistleblower.
You know, I have a good friend who is a pilot, and I messaged him back when this all started, and I was like, hey, do you want to come talk to us and tell us about these planes? He's like, nope, not doing it. But I remember about probably 15, 20 years ago when we were all, you know, sitting around just having a barbecue, and he was telling me, yeah, these planes are old, and they're not being kept up, and... I mean, obviously, that would have been an easy fix. Just make sure that
well, it needs to be documented correctly. Those bolts got removed and then put back on. Apparently, though, the Boeing said they didn't do any of that stuff. Pearson says that for the last couple months, there's been talk that there's no records, and that's obviously not the case. It has actually been available 4 months. Maybe we'll get a little bit better idea on that. They say
if you're a pilot, not worried about losing your job, and want to call in and tell us all about it. Go for it.
Yeah, and you can always be anonymous. We'll definitely do that. And even remarks are great for that. You can talk about them. Just go onto the app, push that little button in the corner. You got your 30 seconds, and you can do them in parts. A lot of people do two of them. You get everything out you need. And just, I know there's a lot of good airlines out there. I believe the Alaska Airlines right now are currently grounded because of their issues. So they told them to stay on the ground. But there are good airlines, but it is an aging system. We've really gone backwards in the world of our infrastructure. When you really look about it, back when flights started, we were very meticulous about everything. When we were building our road infrastructure, our railroad infrastructure, we were very meticulous on making sure that things were done correctly, they were done right, and then we went back and checked to make sure everything was still working correctly. Now, you know, money...
It's just not been maintained and improved.
It's greed. You can put it any way you want, but it's greed. In the long run, you started not paying people enough money. People get lazy. You've kind of screwed over pilots a lot lately. So a lot of them are unhappy. Really, it is kind of funny because we talk about greed, but the airlines are cheaper than they were. A lot of people, they're going to go, oh, no, there's no way. Actually, if you look at Pan Am in the 70s, where a flight from coast to coast was about triple what it is now. When you take in inflation and all the stuff.
Less people flying.
Less people flying, but now we have more people. It's technically cheaper by a single ticket. But the quality is just not there. I don't know why there's not more airlines that get together and go like, hey, we'll go back to just the old style. You got to wear a suit to come on here, and you got to dress up. You're not wearing your juicy pants to get on the plane, and you got to wear shoes.
No, but flip-flops. If you're going to make me remove my shoes, I'm wearing flip-flops.
Well, this is going to be more upscale. This is a plane for people that want to enjoy the flight.
I will dazzle my flip-flops.
I want to be able to... I mean, really... I want a good meal on the plane. I always joke, there's no such thing as a good meal on a plane. That can happen. Also, I don't smoke a cigarette, but I want to be able to smoke a cigarette on a plane.
I'm glad you can't.
If I'm paying that much money, I want to be able to smoke a cigarette on the plane. We talked about this before the break. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit has had to grapple the question whether the compelled use of one person, his name is Jeremy Travis Payne, he used his thumb to unlock his phone, was considered testimonial, which could be used in evidence. To date, neither the Supreme Court nor any sister circuits have addressed whether the compelled use of a biometric to unlock an electronic device is testimonial. What ended up happening is there was dispute in the court over whether a California Highway Patrol officer forcibly used Payne's thumb to unlock the phone. But for the purpose of Payne's appeal, the government accepted the defendant version of the fact that the defendant's thumbprint was compelled. His claim rests entirely on whether the use of his thumb basically related certain facts to the officer, such as that he can avail himself on the privilege of self-incrimination. What they're trying to argue was that when Officer Coddington used Payne's thumb to unlock this phone, which he could have accomplished even if Payne was unconscious, which he was conscious though when he did it, he did not intrude on the contents of Payne's mind. They're trying to argue that it was like using his thoughts, because he was using his thumb to open it up was basically he couldn't self-incriminate. And by using his thumb, it was like him giving himself a confession by self-incriminating himself to open it. Apparently you can do it, though. The court says, no, there's no such thing. It didn't intrude on the contents of Payne's mind.
Because it was already written down. It wasn't stuff that was in his mind.
More, it's just not part of his mind. It was that it's a biometric. They say it falls under the same thing, same ruling as having to get a thumbprint or blood drawn.
Yeah, getting a thumbprint doesn't open up your emails.
Yeah, but okay. It's still, it doesn't, it, not saying that it opened up your emails. I think the point that they're going is opening the phone with a thumb is not self-incrimination. Now, if the officer went through his private emails, which we didn't need a password to get to, then there's more going on there. But just the act of opening the phone doesn't really count.
Okay. Well, if you have your phone in your email, then chances are you have that password saved. So that's opening anyway.
That's on you. You shouldn't be putting
What about the face recognition?
I think it would fall under the same as the thumbprint. Like, they can just hold the phone up to your face and it unlocks it,
Unlock it. No, I won't.
Payne was trying to suppress evidence. He was a California parolee. He was arrested by California Highway Patrol after a 2021 traffic stop and charged with possession with intent to distribute fentanyl, fluorofentanyl, and cocaine. I'm not a big fan of it. That is a privacy break. That's like telling them they have to give you your You got to have to give them your password.
I mean, they can request that. Yeah, they can submit subpoena a warrant.
Yeah, they can subpoena it. But at that moment, he was awake, but they're saying he could have been done even if he was unconscious.
Well, yeah, because if you got your phone, they want to call next to Ken or your ICE person.
The judge said that the compelled use of Payne's thumb to unlock his phone, which he had already identified for the officers that it was his phone, required no cognitive exertion, placing it firmly in the same category as a blood draw or a fingerprint taken at booking.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. You want to get to these remarks?
Yeah, let's do it.
From the Florida Man Radio app, which you too can join in and send yourself a remark. It's a great app. I don't know why you haven't already downloaded it. I'm hoping you have by now. If you have, go ahead and tell a person you're next to. Like, look over to somebody near you and it's like, hey, have you downloaded this? Here, let me get your thumbprint and open up your phone. I'll download it for you. The cop can do that for you, apparently. You can just unload and download it for you. Yeah.
Possibly. I'm sorry. I've got like different.
I know you got like five earbuds going on right now because you're so used to doing other things. You can go ahead, put your name, go ahead, open the app down there. There's all the podcasts. You can get both Don and Shannon. Bubba does his own stuff. You can go get his app if you really want to. But also is the little microphone in the corner where you have 30 seconds to tell the world how you feel.
Oh, you know what? Hold on. Yep, I had to turn that on. Okay, it's host PC's on.
How many people touched their eyelid after EZ's comment?
That was yesterday, but I had to leave it because it was so funny because I was guilty.
Yep, your eyelids are the same as your foreskin. Also, Google what the inside of your mouth is the same as.
Log Cabin Republicans here, and I want to tell you, we're just flaming for Trump. I mean, we're just on fire for Trump.
Eric, what the hell is wrong with you people? Eric, this bit, Eric, is in total bad taste.
Eric, what's wrong with it?
Well, Eric, the fact that I'm not doing it. Eric.
Oh, Uncle Ted, what is with your family? What was with that yesterday, going out and all of them supporting Biden and pretending like he's the greatest Kennedy that's ever existed? There was really super uncool the way they did that. I know they just do not like RFK Jr. His own sister was on there like, yeah, we're going to 100% support the greatest president that we could ever have, and that is Joe Biden.
Hey, guys, super stoked that you guys took over for Shannon. Good to hear you guys. I was talking about the Kennedys. I know the sister to RFK was on talking. She talks just like him, but she's female. It's like they're dying or something. It's like, they're just, they both, is there something inbreeding going on in the Kennedy family? I just don't get it.
No comment, but possibly. She does sound exactly like him, too. She has that same issue with her throat. So it does. It's weird to hear. You don't hear. I think they're the only two people I've ever heard that actually have that. It's a bit strange.
Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. Yes. No, I mean, just excuse me. I had a bunch of cabbage last night. Sorry about that. Sorry, Alice.
Ah, the fart committee.
Hey guys, I find it really funny, you know, Heather is hesitating whether she would want to personally hang out with Donald Trump. And all of this is based on tweets or what other people have said about him. I don't think either of you two have met him. I haven't. But it seems to me that every single person that ever has met him has good things to say, and they say, wow, he was really, really fun to be around and a nice guy to be around. So, geez, I think I'm going to take all that stock more than our own thoughts. Beedoo.
Yeah, I have not gotten to personally meet him. Shannon did. I got left outside in the arena. But we did get to see the, that was back, Joffre got that as well.
Yeah.
So. But we went and we were there for that O'Reilly event, the history tour, where Trump sat down and talked to him. And that was really before he had kicked off his political campaign again. And it was fascinating. Even somebody, I think a lot of people, the vitriol and the hate they have clouds them that they can't they hate him no matter what he says. And it's fun to sit. I think even people that don't like him, if you sat down and listened for a little bit, you would find some things that you have in common or find interesting.
Happy Friday, guys. Okay. Easy, Heather, don't lie. We all know Shannon went a little extra heavy with the hydro pump or whatever it was that the guy from the erection clinic gave him yesterday. No shame in it. Have a great weekend. Beedo-beedo.
They gave him one?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, my gosh.
He got the hydro pump. Yeah, thanks for Men's Health Clinic yesterday. That was fun with Adam coming in and hanging out with us yesterday.
And you're right. That's why he's out.
Yeah, we didn't really want to talk about it too much, but he took it home. You have to put it in the shower, which was funny. He's going through like the booklet just to look at it, because it's a weird thing to give a person, like one guy to give to another guy. It's healthcare. Yeah. Remember that. It's not any pleasurable. It's healthcare.
Yeah.
But it had weird things. It's supposed to be used in the shower specifically. It's water based. I don't know. I don't get it. I didn't look too far of it.
He didn't give you one too?
No. That's a host thing. The hosts get the penis pumps. But it did have a strap, so you could put it on and then put it around your neck, and you could go hands-free, like if you need to do other stuff in the shower.
I'm going to leave that alone.
Heather, easy. Y'all talking about jury duty. I've been called in twice in my 29 years of being eligible for jury duty. Thank God they haven't called me more. Beedo beedo.
Star Trek guy here. Rating today's show. A little rough in the beginning, but not bad. Easy, you're rolling with it now. And, I mean, Shannon would be like Hydro. You guys would be like Mids. And the rerun would be like smoking that resin. I mean, I'd rather have those Mids than be smoking that resin. Beedo beedo.
Do like to be on the Mids level. If I'm going to have to be rated, that's I'm fine with that, I guess.
What's up, guys? Rebby here. Hey, Eric, I didn't know that you ride. I'm going to try to make it out there, ride with you guys. Leesburg. Great show. Love you guys. Rebby out.
Yeah, Rebby, I don't. I know my limitations. I'm super clumsy a lot of times. Lucky enough, I've not been in a lot of car accidents. I'm, you know, fingers crossed. That's my wife. She's going to be mad that I said that. But no, I know my limitations. I try to stay off of things that could kill me just too easily.
Well, Easy's got the keys to the car, eh? Going to take her out. Going to see how she handles. Dark history with Heather. Well, that sounds like a penthouse forum letter. Maybe time spent in an NBA locker room. Well, Easy, remember to hold on to the wheel. Because you know that Matt from Laguna Call is out there just waiting. Like a giant pothole. God bless.
I've been looking to see if I had a Matt Laguna type of story. Maybe he got his thumbprint taken by an officer or something like that. We'll see. It's still early. Also, it is weird sitting over here. I don't have enough buttons in front of me to push.
Tunde Tono, after listening to Heather Has Answers today, I think the Orlando gay community may be trying to somewhat prank you. There's a lot of conservative gays out there, and they're all funny as hell. Sounds suspicious, but they're all great people. It's great they're listening.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been to the Parliament House many times for the kickoff of Gay Week. It is fun as hell, but I always bring my wife.
Todd likes that validation too. I think there's a lot of guys that would say no way, but there are also the guys that they're gonna be a little wary when they're at that club. But that first time a guy comes up and says, "You're looking really good tonight," it's a little validation. You feel like, "Oh, damn, I don't swing that way, but if I did, man, apparently I'm a catch."
It's a compliment, yeah.
Dang, Liberal Larry, you ain't got to email Heather under anonymous. We know.
Old mommy talk.
What's up, guys? Rebby here. For the dude stalking the bank teller, I think he's the worst of all. You never put down your chick that you're with to another girl. It just shows the girl how much of a douche you are. That guy is a real a-hole. And he doesn't deserve either one of those females. Ray out. Great show. Beedoo.
It is always off-putting when someone talks bad about their spouse. It doesn't matter. Or their girlfriend or boyfriend. It doesn't matter if it's the guy talking to another guy or the girl talking to... It's not okay.
Yeah.
I have determined that Heather really likes Easter eggs.
Not particularly, but I do have a tween at home that is all about them.
Oh, and so she's been like psychoanalyzing everything. Gosh.
I am to the point where I am tired of Taylor Swift, and I used to be like a fan, but I've had enough. But it's fine. I'll survive for her. It's fine.
Hey guys, thanks for holding down the fort so Shannon can have some much deserved time off. Great show. So yesterday, Liberal Larry called in and analyzed the caller on, Heather Has Answers. And now I think today he's actually contributing his story about his mommy fetish. So I don't know. Maybe he's like a closet contributor. Beedoo.
You know, we were talking about earlier that Mary has such a great voice.
I know. I love it.
Cadence that, like, she would be like reading a bedtime story.
Yeah, she should come in and like read the Heather Has Answers emails.
Shane B checking in. Hey, Eric, Heather, y'all are doing a great job today holding the fort down, man. I don't even notice that Shannon's gone. Shannon who? Y'all should do this every Friday, man. I think it'd be fun. You actually get some work done around there. You guys have a great show.
I appreciate Shane B, but never could replace Shannon on that. It's just nice to come out here and hold the fort down for a little bit and give him a little time off there.
Easy, Double H, this is G-Off. Y'all are nailing it. Filling in for Shannon. Y'all are doing a great job. Beedoo. Have a great weekend.
All right, that's all we have time for right now. There's plenty of time here in the last hour to get yours in. It's Friday. I know you guys... I know our fans, so they have started drinking 20, 30 minutes ago, if not earlier.
I was going to say at noon.
It's Friday. Don't judge.
I'm not.
So get those remarks in. We'll have a little fun in the last hour. But up next, I am super excited about this. I don't get to say this too often, but how dark are we getting, Heather?
Oh, my gosh. Darker than, well, okay, whatever you expect from me, it's going to be very dark. You expect Heather and Bones.
Yeah, I expect a lot of dark stuff, so I don't know if I get much darker than that.
It's all Bones.
All right, well, we'll hear when we come back. This is the Shannon Burke Show here on the Florida Man Radio Network. Oh, Elon Musk. I think people here just want to hate on him sometimes. This is a scientist, Dr. Sierra Salter-Hunt. Their new study, they are basically saying that the Elon Musk Starlink satellites are going to all kill us.
Oh, there's a lot of junk up there. It starts falling, and yeah, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I know they put Elon on this mainly because of the fact of his Starlinks. There's a lot of them up there, but people don't understand that that's like a fraction of what all is up there. We have a problem with that. There is a reason why we created the Space Force. There is at some point we're going to have to be able to go have people go up there and start cleaning some of this junk out of space. Dr. Hunt's new study draws on new estimates that SpaceX is burning over 1.3 tons of wireless internet satellite debris into Earth's atmosphere every hour, creating a metal layer.
It's already falling.
Yeah, they do.
Great.
They create a metal layer of conductive particulate in orbit. This person says no one has given much research to the accumulation of metal dust from the space industry. They say that in an extreme case, such a layer of charged metal dust could lead to atmospheric stripping akin to the ancient fates of Mars and Mercury. So, you enjoying that Starlink satellite, getting you internet and your TV out in the middle of nowhere? Apparently, old Elon is destroying the atmosphere because they're all melting up there and destroying the magnetic field. Apparently, though, reading through a lot of this, it's kind of junk science. They're like, they could... Maybe, possibly, we have no idea.
They don't know.
I think there's too often they just try to throw Elon out there just to hate on him.
When you think of all the launches into space right now, the person you think about, if you're going to think about a person, is going to be Elon.
Yeah, you can hate him for other things, but what he's done with Starlink and also SpaceX and things like that to basically resuscitate our dying space industry. We had years. I grew up over in Brevard County where NASA was and watched pretty much half the kids there. Their parents either worked at Sea Ray or they worked at NASA. And guess who didn't have any jobs anymore? A lot of them worked at NASA. So, and now that they're back out launching stuff, well, look, something's happened out there. You saw all the stuff going on in Dubai, the UAE, where it's flooded.
Right.
There's a lot of rumors that they're saying that it was cloud seeding that got out of hand. Now, they've immediately come back and said, no. It's we have no idea what you're talking about. Freak storm, El Nino, climate change. They definitely don't want to say it's cloud seeding because this one meteorologist, they basically said that his name is Johan Yawks. It's just like the best meteorologist name ever.
Yeah, that is good.
He's a senior meteorologist at Environmental Technology with a company called, their name is Kisters. He believes there could be unintended consequences, basically that if we get good enough with seeding clouds that we can cause storms like that, that it can become a weapon.
It seems like if we can seed clouds, we should be able to stop hurricanes.
Yeah, but this is more they're talking about. Go to the Middle East. They said if you could, basically, Dubai's destroyed right now. The airport's still flooded. They can't get anybody in and out of it. They don't have great drainage because, well, they don't need it. So it's a mess there. They're pretty much basically debilitated. So if you could actually go across and say, if you're at war with them and you go and see the cloud, you're not killing anybody, so you're not feeling bad for dropping, say, a bomb on them. But you are pretty much taking them out of contention by doing that. So if not, we're not careful, unrestrained use of this technology could end up causing diplomatic instabilities with neighboring countries engaging in a tit-for-tat weather war.
Well, that's fun. Mm-hmm. I still don't understand that seeding thing, but I started reading it, and if I understood the words, then it kind of made sense, but like, that is crazy that that even works. Okay.
No, I'm not. I'm letting you.
That was all I got. I can't believe that works.
That's crazy. I don't get it. All right, let's go ahead and get dark.
Okay.
It's Disturbing History with EZ. There's a lot of history out there. Some of it isn't in the books.
It's actually with Heather today, but Paris, the city of love, the city of light. Paris is a dark, dark place. Paris is the city of death, and you can try to prove me wrong. 65 feet under Paris are the Paris catacombs. They're a massive maze of tunnels running under the city in all directions, covering 150 to 200 miles. Currently, there are over 3,000 square feet that are open to the public, five stories underground. At the entrance, you'll see the infamous warning, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce it in French.
Please try to pronounce it in French.
Okay. Arrête, c'est ici la impère de la mort. It means beautiful. Stop. This is the empire of death. So as you're entering the catacombs, that's what's the warning. So before the catacombs, we have Saints Innocents Cemetery, which was also called the Holy Innocents Cemetery. It's a defunct cemetery in Paris that was used from the Middle Ages until the 1800s, or the 18th century, rather. It was the largest city in Paris, and it closed in 1780 after 10 centuries due to overcrowding.
Now, this was an above-ground cemetery
or below? This was an above-ground. Okay. I mean, in the ground, but like...
Yeah, but not in the catacombs itself.
Not in the catacombs, no. People buried there died of natural causes, as well as tuberculosis, sweating sickness, smallpox, dysentery, typhoid, influenza, mumps, and gastrointestinal infections. There was also the Hundred Year War and the Great Famine, bubonic plague, plus all the people who just died over the centuries. Prior to the cemetery closing, Louis XV was making bank on burials because all the proceeds from the burials were going to the church, and he obviously didn't want to give up that income. So once the land had filled up and the bodies, there was no more room to bury them. They dug pits that would hold One report said 1,500. A lot of the reports I read said 500 bodies, and then they would transfer the bodies to these pits.
These are mostly just mass graves, right?
They're just mass graves, right. So, and I also read this morning that when you buy a grave, you're also renting it for 15 to 50 years. And after that, they're allowed to move them if you don't keep paying. The bodies, let's see.
I don't know why I find that hilarious where you're going to be like, hey, by the way, your Nana's rental on her casket spot, it's up. You're going to have to find a new place to put her.
Yeah, that's just weird. The lime in the ground would help the bodies to break down, and the pits were left open for weeks, sometimes months, and when they were full, then they were covered over to help the body decompose. The bodies that had already turned into bones were put in a charnel house, which is just a small building built only to hold bones. Funeral workers got more efficient and eventually had trap doors under the graves so the workers could lower coffins down. After the funeral, they'd remove and dismember the bodies and send the coffins back to the funeral home to be used again. Those bodies that were dismembered, the head and limbs were thrown into the pit and the torsos were incinerated because you can't put flesh and tissue in with the other bones.
Yeah, you create a giant compost heap at that point.
Yeah, and that's not what they wanted. So this was not widely known to the common folk. This was, again, there's a lot of reports that contradict pretty much all of this, but after listening to 400 podcasts and reading the entire internet, I put together what I feel like is the most correct. So it was not known widely to the common folk that their loved ones were being, or they thought their loved ones were being buried with dignity, and they were still paying a fortune to bury their loved ones within the city. But Paris stunk. Perfume was very expensive and no longer worked to cover the smells. Stores closed, clothes changed colors from the putrid air, wine in cellars turned to vinegar instantly upon opening them. The air and everything else was pungent and everyone was becoming sick. It was becoming a public health problem. Those 500 or 1,500 person pits or quarries began to fill up, and then the retaining walls of those pits started to crumble. One even fell into an occupied restaurant. Bodies fell through the wall in an occupied restaurant.
Oh, man. Think you're there enjoying a cigarette and a croissant, and all of a sudden bodies come tumbling through there.
The first major collapse occurred in December of 1774 when an unstable tunnel crumbled, swallowing houses and people along with what is now the Avenue d'Infert-Rochereau. More holes opened over the next few years, sending more houses tumbling into the darkness. In 1776, Louis XV signed a decree prohibiting extracting materials from under the roads because the Romans had started all that, pulling up the limestone to build their buildings and roads and everything. They used all the limestone with no regard. So he said, no more extracting material from under the roads. And the next year, he created the Department of General Quarry Inspection to further protect the Parisian quarries. He also imposed an order that non-Parisians could not be buried in the cemetery. He had wanted it closed entirely, but the church intervened, saying that they were doing the Lord's work and that the money they got was nice. So the Romans had been quarrying in that limestone in the area since 60 BC. As surface stone deposits became scarce, the open pit quarrying became more difficult, and miners began to dig vertically. That's what made the tunnels. And then they evacuated or
excavated.
Thank you. Horizontally to extract the stone deposits. Once all the limestone was removed, they just left it. The quarries just stayed there. Charles Axel Guillemot was a French architect that was hired to put support systems under the city within the catacombs. By 1775, they were stable. This is where I was. Okay. Louis XV wasn't actually able to ban burials like he had wanted, but Louis XVI came up with an idea that would keep the burial funds within the city. As of 1780, Les Innocents Cemetery was closed and was later paved over and has a beautiful fountain and garden sitting on top. Also in 1780, those holding pit collapses deemed them unsafe and led to the bones needing to be moved again. Even to this day, Paris cannot build huge buildings due to the entire town being above these limestone quarries. It took 12 full years to move all 6 to 7 million bodies from those pits into the catacombs. The site was consecrated as the Paris Municipal Ossuary on April 7th, 1786, and from that time forward took on the mythical name of the Catacombs in reference to the Roman catacombs. From 1787 to 1814, the tombs, graves, and charnel houses were emptied of their bones, transported 2 miles on foot, the bodies on carts, draped with black sheets, and at night, to avoid hostile reactions from the Parisians' population and the church. They also traveled with a priest who gave last rites to the bones as they were dumped into the quarries.
Can you get double last rites? Because that's what they were getting.
Yeah, they just didn't want the bones. Yeah.
You don't want evil French devil bones?
No, not when you got 6 million of them. And when all the bones were dumped down these wells, they were distributed into piles, they distributed and piled them into galleries by the quarry workers. And fun fact, the street they traveled along was named Barrière des Enfers, which means gate of hell. So the road they traveled was the gate to hell into the catacombs. Some of the graves were fresher than others, and if the bones were not free and clear of debris and skin, the workers had to burn it off before tossing it down the well.
Ooh, fun.
Another totally weird thing happens that when a body slowly decays due to the humidity, like in the pits and the catacombs, more the pits because the fat melts away out of the body and onto the floor.
Yeah, it becomes like a wax-like substance.
Wax called corpse wax. And people were literally scooping up the wax, taking it home, and making soap and candles. Candles were not always made from soy. Originally, they were made from animal fat, and during this time, human fat. So you could burn Aunt Ethel, keep her presence around for a while.
Yeah, they made a lot of candles that way.
Yeah.
They don't really want to talk about it, but there was a lot back when they were disposing of bodies that they were using human fat for making candles and such.
Otherwise, what else do you do with it? You know, you gotta.
You don't want it laying around.
Right. So the transfers continued after the French Revolution until 1814, when the suppression of the parochial cemeteries in the center of Paris. Starting in 1809, the catacombs were open to the public by appointment only, and there was a guest book at the end of the tour, and guests had a lot to say. And in 1830, it was closed due to public opinion of it being disrespectful and in poor taste. By 1840, urban renovation of the city meant more graves needed to be moved, and in 1860, the last bone deposits were made. They did reopen the catacombs for people to tour, and I think I've got that date later, but some famous people who ended up in the catacombs, you have architects, Salomon de Brosse.
Of course.
The French fairy tale and fable writers that wrote Cinderella and I forget what the other one was. They're down there. There's painters, but also the 1,343 people guillotined under the terror of the Palace de la Concorde, mixed with millions of other remains, and the bodies of these illustrious people could never be identified. Only one death has been officially confirmed in the Paris catacombs, and I read and listened to so much stuff, it kept saying there's this death and this death and this death, but the only one that is documented was in 1793. Philibert, I'm going to call him Philibert because that's what it looks like. Philibert Aspirate, a doorkeeper for the Val de Grace Hospital. He died in the catacombs at age 62. It was thought that he had a single candle with him, and it burned out. He died in the darkness, and in 1804, 11 years later, they found him.
He's still haunted that place.
Just his bones. He was only identified by the hospital key ring and the buttons on his jacket. A bottle of liquor was found beside him. 10 feet away was a staircase that would have led to an exit. There are several rumors that why he was in the catacombs. One of them was that he was out there to map it out. He was searching for the famous chartreuse liqueur stocked in a cellar of the convent. The sister Sorel killed him for stealing chartreuse from the convent. He was driven by his craving for booze and went to the catacombs with only one candle. Some think it might have been to try to break into the basement of a nearby brewery. Although he liked his alcohol. Philibert is buried where he died and is celebrated as the protector of the cataphiles. The cataphiles are people who tour the catacombs when they're not supposed to. Every November 3rd, his ghost is said to haunt the galleries of the catacombs, and there are rumors that after midnight, voices start trying to guide people further into the tunnels. And if you get lost, you die. You just do. There's 200 miles of darkness and you're just screwed. There's no light. The darkest place you'll ever be. There's also a video that was discovered, and as of a podcast I listened to this weekend, that might have been fake because it was discovered by a documentary maker, possibly.
Okay, so found footage type of thing.
Yeah, so in the early 1990s, an unknown man filmed a video of himself traversing the Paris catacombs. Along the path, he finds many things. There's arrows painted along the wall. There's arrows made out of bones on the ground. There's a humanoid-type painting sprawled along the wall. And, of course, you know, more bones. After getting spooked and frightened, the man starts running. And soon he drops his camera into a puddle of water. And it's unknown if he survived. It's highly unlikely if it's real. But he's never been found. The footage was found by Francis Friedland, and he claims the footage is over 40 minutes long. You can see it online. You can see like a minute 25 there. You just have to Google it. The uneasiness kicks in when you remember that it purports to show a man's final moments, and the man who filmed it was allegedly never seen again. But nothing I read said the man died or got out. Again, Philibert's the only person officially confirmed to have died down there. Now, this is really cool because I won't explore caves, but there are people who do. And this LEUX was formed in September of 1981. The members they're the cataphiles, or more modernly, urban explorers. The founders of this group stole plans of the underground passageways and tunnels. They literally stole the only map. And using this information as its base, the group of anonymous artists and citizens have since restored much of Paris's underground infrastructure, including the Pantheon clock, which chimed for the first time in many years after its repair. Like, nobody knew it was getting repaired by these people who weren't supposed to be down there, and then all of a sudden it starts chiming, which is...
Yeah, that'll scare you to death when you start hearing a clock that's not supposed to be working anymore underground.
Yeah, and then the group is also responsible for over a dozen other projects, which include including those which the French government has not chosen to do anything for or what they lacked funds for. The organizations actually divide up into teams. There's an all-female team called the Mouse House. They're specializing in infiltration. There's a team running an internal messaging system and coded radio network, a team providing a database, a team organizing underground shows, like for entertainment. That's crazy. A team doing photography, another restoration, and the Untergunther. And I believe I get to that in a minute.
Oh, yes, the old Untergunther.
Yes. Okay. In September of 2004, French police discovered an underground movie theater run by Le Mexicain de Préférence. The Mexican Consolidated Drilling Authority is what that translates to. It's a makeshift theater. There was a makeshift theater that contained a movie screen, a wall, a well-stocked bar, and a kitchen. Many of the theater chairs were carved out of the limestone. Telephones and electricity were brought in from unknown locations, and movie titles ranging from the 1950s classics to modern thrillers were also discovered. When the police returned for a formal investigation the next day, all of the equipment had disappeared. The only thing left was a note on the floor reading, "Ne cherchez pas," which means "do not search" or "don't come looking." In October of 2007, they received attention for a project assisted by professional clockmaker Jean-Baptiste Voigt to clandestinely restore the famous clock in the Pantheon. How do they say it? Pantheon. Never caught, and upon completion, they announced their work at a meeting with the administrator of the Pantheon, who called the police. Parisian authorities opposed the group's actions and started a police unit to track the group through the sewers and the catacombs of Paris in an attempt to apprehend and charge its members. Charges were brought against four Untergunther restorers of the Pantheon clock, but at trial, after 20 minutes deliberation, the judge ruled in their favor.
Why charge them for it? They fixed a clock underground.
Right. One of the government's prosecutors referred to the charges as stupid. One of the Untergunther's restorers, Jean-Baptiste Voigt, was later appointed as the official restorer of the clock in 2018, and his work during the Untergunther restoration cited as proof of his qualifications. Other rumors that and interesting tidbits is that there is farming currently going on in the catacombs. Back in 1820, Napoleonic soldiers discovered that horse manure combined with the cave's dark, damp environment provided the perfect conditions for growing mushrooms. And these aren't like drug shrooms. These are just like regular old mushrooms. During World War II, the French Renaissance retreated underground and had meetings here to plan their attacks against Germans. There are also rumors that pointed to King Charles X having secret parties in the tunnels. Francois Decure, a quarry worker and former soldier, carved intricate designs into the building and scenes out of the limestone rocks. There's actually a, it looks like one of those little tiny buildings that people build in an entire room, a whole room made of this. It's believed that many other sculptures and mosaics in the tunnels were made by sculpture students who used the soft rock to practice their craft. A stolen skull from the catacombs was left at Disneyland Haunted Mansion, or was it? It's a rumor that's not been proven, but cool if it happened. Pierre Chérard suggested making the bones into glass, and there's even a recipe he has for it. I have not had time to look that up, but
yeah, check to see if your bones can make glass.
How cool would that be? He suggested that they can make them into busts of your living or of your dead ancestors, so that you could, like, I don't know, I'll talk pass. To them or yeah. something. So if you want to visit the Paris catacombs, it'll only cost you $20. And if you pre-register, you won't have to wait in line. Otherwise, the lines can be 3 to 4 hours long. And you can't save a place too far out. Online booking has to be done within 7 to 10 days of visiting. And there's no wheelchair or walker access because it's like
just steps. Oh, the ADA is going to be upset about that one. But they don't have jurisdiction in France, so.
Yeah. Obviously, you can find pictures all over the web. You can find the video under 2 minutes of that mysterious videotape. And just a footnote to Michael and Matt, I've already listened to all the podcasts that talk about the catacombs. We're good. And last note, y'all need to write this down. If you go to catasphere.fr, you can tour it virtually. Catasphere.fr. It was crazy. I think I heard people's voices in it too. It was neat. Anyway, that is my story of the creepy ass bone dungeon.
Oh, thank you, Heather, for that. I know you were worried earlier this week. You're like, how is the Olympics not going to fall into the city yes. with all the issues they have there?
Yeah, you can't even build like a huge heavy building. Now you've got all these. Yeah, it's going to collapse. There are still collapses throughout the city.
I'm hoping they maybe figure that out.
I'm kind of hoping some collapses.
Yeah, it would make for an interesting Olympics. All right, when we come back, we're going to take a break. Millennials, I'm married in that group, and apparently there's a lot of us that think that you're going to retire by the age of 60. And also, incels, you hear about them all the time, the sexless men that are involuntary celibate. Apparently, give them a couple years, and they'll be able to get you a cheap house because of them. We'll have that and more when we come back. It's the Shannon Burke Show on the Florida Man Radio Network. So, how much do you think you have saved for retirement?
Not enough. Not even close.
Do you have a couple 401k retirement stuff sitting around?
Yeah, but I haven't contributed to my 401 because I haven't had been full-time
yeah.
since pre-kids. My husband's is fine, but I mean, I think it's neglectful to think that you can live off one person's 401k these days, because you can't.
A YouGov poll asking what age most people think they're expecting to retire. The average millennial actually expects to retire before the age of 60, which is just insane because it's not going to happen, not anymore. That might be something you used to be able to do, but it's not happening anymore. The largest share, 30%, chose the range of 51 to 60. Another recent survey by the Principal Financial found that the average millennial expects to retire at the age of 59.
That's so cute.
Other retirement surveys find millennials plan to work well into their 60s. I think that's going to happen, especially now. More and more companies, because people are living longer and longer, you're going to be working longer and longer. I know that's not the American dream. I think most people are like, I got to get out of there by 50, 60. That's when I'm going to retire. I think you probably need to be looking more at 70 on just like a minimum at this point, because it's just the economy's, unless it explodes back, we're looking for a while on that.
You know what? Just find a job you like. I think that's the key. Find a job you like, and then you can work until forever. I mean,
yeah. I think when I get old, I'm going to do I'm gonna work at a theme park to do like the old people, you know, the old people that stand there and just like point you to one direction or the other.
You mean a Walmart greeter?
Well, I'm not doing Walmart greeting though. I have some standards. Nothing wrong with being a Walmart greeter. But you know, I'm talking like theme park where you just go, okay, left line, regular people, right lane, fast pass, get on there.
That would be a fun mindless job. I think you'd get hot in Florida.
Well, of course.
You may not like that so much.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. You got a caller?
We do. We have Jonathan Morris on the line. What's up?
Jonathan Morris of Morganic Meats and Morris Family Farms, which happens to be the power of our remarks. I forgot to throw that in there, and I know he wants that. What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up? Speaking of working, I thought you were supposed to work till you died. I thought that's kind of how to deal with.
That is the way it is now. Well, I mean, the true people that have tilled the land since the beginning of time worked until they died. But, you know, you see where we're at now.
Yes, when I'm done using this fertilizer, that's what I tell them. Don't buy a casket. When I'm done, just turn me in. Me into the soil.
Yeah, okay. We just talked about that with the Parisians. You can just chop you up and toss you in the soil.
Yeah, but then you end up leaving, like, this wax. You don't want to do that either. Maybe cremation might be a good idea.
Well, bury me deep and let the worm eat me. Yeah, cool. Hey, you're doing a great job. You like that show, buddy. I've been catching in between cutting cows.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yes, and I don't know if anybody wants to see me work or see me try to work. Tomorrow I'm walking with Heather down in Orlando to help save some lives.
That's
and
right.
We're auctioning off a half cow. What do we got that, Heather? Was that halfcowauction@gmail.com?
Yes, we are walking for Choices Women's Clinic. They do a walk for life. If you go to Jonathan's Facebook page, he's got it listed there. Maybe it's under Amy's. I'm not sure. But, yeah, so we're going to do the walk for life, and we have the half cow auction going on. All of the proceeds go to Choices Women's Clinic, which they take the abortion-minded women, and then they empower them and show them how they can keep their babies, and they help them with things that they need, whether it's groceries or just mentoring or whatever it is that they need. It's a great organization. But, yeah, our half-cow auction is at $2,200 right now. If anybody would like to top that, you can email
half-cow. They want to check it. I just had a text. Buddy of mine up in Fort Walton just texted me. He's like, I'm fixing a bid on that half-cow. So I don't know what he put in, but... I just got a text.
We are up to 2,600. Yep. So.
All right. My bad.
That's
so
awesome.
It's a silent auction. I can't say his name yet, but you know who you are. Thank you for that bid. Yeah. I think he actually lives in Navarre.
Okay.
Cool dude. He's a cool dude.
All right.
That's awesome.
Well, go to halfcowauction.com.
Right, come walk with us tomorrow. And then we're doing a free barbecue. Easy if you want to come out. We're doing a free barbecue at our shop. All the donations we collect during the barbecue will also go to Choices Women's Clinic.
All right.
So thank you all for having me on.
Sounds cool, Jonathan.
You.
See you later.
So, yeah.
Halfcowauction.com.
No, at gmail.com. You're bidding. So it's halfcowauction@gmail.com.
Did I say at halfcowauction.com?
Yeah, no, we don't have a .com. We ain't that fancy.
At gmail.com.
We do have an email that was free.
Actually, this story will skip ahead a little bit because... You have that walk for life thing going on tomorrow, and this just kind of boils my blood. You know, there's a lot of people that the abortion talk is going crazy right now, and the argument is, women's autonomy. When is too late for an abortion? Can there no abortions at all? You know, the argument goes back and forth, and you can have your opinion on it. I have mine, and that's the one thing. But this lady is a monster, and I have big problems with this. She's a TikToker who goes by the name Just Sunny. Her real name is Sunny, or Sunny, maybe. She decided to share the lighthearted vlog where she talks about her at-home abortion.
That's tacky.
Actually, multiple women have taken to social media to share the day-in-the-life vlogs documenting the process of terminating their pregnancy at home and offering advice to others who plan to do so. This is a personal decision you have to make on your own in a state that has the laws that follow your beliefs. But to go on on TikTok and have a party and pretend like it's the happiest day of your life is really messed up. She has, she's quoted saying, have an abortion with me. She begins her abortion blog as she twirls around her kitchen as a bright, gentle spring jazz piano music plays in the background. She shows viewers how she prepared for it, including stocking up snacks and self-care stuff, as well as preparing meals in advance for herself and her baby that she is about to abort.
Wait. So she is... Did she call it a baby? Yes. She was picking food that the baby...
That she thought it would like, yes.
Okay, so that's murder, right?
She's a murderer,
she
yes.
She knows it's a baby.
Yeah.
Again, she can't even play dumb at that point.
You have your beliefs, whatever you have. And again, you have your... the state laws that you live in, where if you don't follow those laws, you can go someplace else. But this, it's just messed up. It really is. There's no other way to put it. She soon revealed that she had her first baby because she ghosted the abortion she intended on having. So she didn't even want her first kid, which...
Oh, that poor kid.
Yeah, I really just want to show this.
I wonder how old it is.
I don't know.
I wonder if it knows.
But for this pregnancy, she stated she just could not have another baby and opted for said... the mifepristone and misoprostol. It's the pill at home.
Yeah, so she probably had severe cramping and severe bleeding and probably some nausea she might have thrown up. She probably felt like crap. Did she show any of that in the videos?
No. All of it was her just showing how happy she was and how she's enjoying some light jazz music while she does it. Some people commenting on it. It's not like she knew what she didn't know what she was doing. Mentioned that Suni referred to the unborn fetus as baby multiple times in the video. Another person said she could do whatever the F she wants because it's her option to have an abortion, but the whole vlog and happy music behind it makes it absolutely effing wild. Imagine having a great time filming such video for internet clout.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it's a monster.
How old is she, does it say?
She's a TikToker, so... yeah. I know you're a TikToker too, but... you're not exactly going online and showing off your abortion video.
No. It's, no.
There's some really messed up people on TikTok when it comes to these things. And I don't know if she actually had one. This could be. There's a lot of them. They do fake ones, which are like really. Don't remember for a while.
I have a happy abortion? Why am I in pain? Yeah.
You remember there was for a while on TikTok, there was a thing where it was girls that were dressing up like they were Holocaust victims. And they were pretending to be like, this is what I would have been. This is how the last few days of my life was as I was a Holocaust victim. People do anything.
Okay, so
for...
that's not on my algorithm, thank God.
Yeah, people will do anything.
But there was a man that I followed him for a little while. And he was a abortion advocate and said that every woman should have one so they know what it was like. And I followed him because I'd like to know what the world other people are thinking. Like, what the other side thinks, and he lost me. He was totally delusional and probably on drugs.
Yeah, there was a famous actress that did the same. She basically said that her life just couldn't have been the same if she didn't have as multiple ones.
I hope it sterilized her, and I know that's really
I think
hateful.
It did, because she didn't have any kids, I think. That's the one I think it is. That's a personal thing. Don't go on TikTok to do it. Again, I said it's your decision. If it's legal in your state... the person you got to talk to is your person in the afterlife. If that was a moral decision that was correct for you, but don't go out celebrating. Don't go have a party. Don't put on jazz music and dance around online and try to get TikTok views. You're a monster. You're the type of people that I would put up in a mental hospital.
I bet her comments were turned off because she probably got a lot of hate.
Yeah. They're the type, there's actually, where is that other story that I had of another TikTok lady, this one. She's a young mom. Her name is Rachel Gibbs, and she's from Houston, Texas. She had her daughter, but she got online, and she told everybody, I have the best. I've got the best idea. I'm going to revolutionize the world when it comes to a baby, a baby's first birthday.
Okay. Give it to me.
She's planning for her daughter Hazel's one-year-old birthday celebration on TikTok last month, and she revealed she didn't want to spend any money on the party, which meant she would not be serving a meal or a cake, had no plans to buy decorations or provide any games for the partygoers to play. She also said that instructed guests on the invitation to not bring toys or clothes for the birthday girl, but in lieu of presents to make donations towards her new backyard that she's working on. Why even have a party at that point? Well, I mean, she's not really, but why send out invitations?
She wants people to work on her backyard instead of honor her one-year-old baby who isn't really there for the party in the first place.
Well, she wanted donations.
Okay, that's weird.
She stated that I specifically put on the invitations, please do not bring gifts. Homegirl needs nothing. If you feel inclined to bring something, consider $5 because we're trying to remodel our backyard. Our backyard is a train wreck. Bring us $5 to help redo our yard. That's what we're asking for.
And you don't get anything. You get to look at our one-year-old baby.
Yeah, Hazel doesn't need anything. Also, I'm very picky, so I don't want you to buy S for my kids.
Not a problem.
I'm just not going to show up at that point.
Now, I have seen people go and say, hey, no need to bring a gift. Come celebrate the party. They do have cake and snacks and drinks. But, like, my cousin did something for an animal shelter, and she was like, in lieu of gifts, how about bring a bag of dog food or bag of cat food or the towels that you need to get rid of, and we'll take it all. And they ended up with a ton of stuff to donate, but
it's still a one-year-old is still aware of a party going on for them. Yes, they're not probably going to remember them, but they know that there's something going on, there's something fun going on, they get to do a smash cake, they are aware enough to enjoy it.
Yeah,
it's not like a two-month-old that's a potato in a bouncer.
Well, yeah, and most one-year-old parties center around that one-year-old, so there's always a lot of attention being
given. She also stated, please eat before you come. There will be some snacks, but that's it. I'm not doing any games. She also said, I put 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. on the invitation. I want you to know, no, I don't want you at my house all day. Anyone coming to a one-year-old's birthday party is already up at 9 a.m., so they can suck it up for one day. I don't expect you to sacrifice your entire Saturday for a child's birthday party.
Nobody does.
And she said at 11 o'clock, I will have people to immediately leave. So get out of my house at 11 o'clock.
So 9:30 to 11?
Yep.
Okay, that is kind of the perfect time span for a birthday party. Yeah. My five-year-old's getting that length of party this weekend.
Well, of course, people did not find it funny or impressive anyway. Got a lot of hate in a follow-up response. Rachel responded to some of the haters, defended her decision, asked for the money, saying that we wanted to redo our backyard so the kids can play in it. She's not going to care or remember that she didn't get presents at her first birthday party. We give stuff away weekly. And then the comments just continue to get going and to the point where she said, hey, so I'm going to be taking a little break from TikTok because that video I posted about Hazel's birthday party, people didn't like it as she started crying in the camera. So,
you don't say.
Oh, I feel so bad for you.
Just kidding.
You own your house, right?
Well, I will in like 25 years.
Yeah, you bought a house. You're not renting your house.
No.
Yeah, I still rent. It's been the easiest. For the longest time, we were changing jobs so often that it was not worth it to put down roots.
Right.
So, we'll rent. I got a good landlord. He doesn't bother me. It's not expensive.
Do you have to do the yard work?
I pay a company to come do the yard work, so.
That's nice.
It is nice. It's not a massive yard, but it has no trees anymore because the tree got struck by lightning a couple years ago and had to be torn down, so.
That also wasn't on you.
It wasn't on me, and also.
That's expensive.
So it's like Hades trying to push a lawnmower through. It's a fairly large lawn, so I'm like, you know what? Somebody else can do it. I'll pay them. I don't feel bad. But the lady, she calls herself the Oracle of Wall Street. She's a financial analyst. She says that a growing crisis of young American males will cause house prices to fall as much as 30% in the next couple of years. Meredith Whitney, who earned the title after predicting the financial crisis of 2007, suggested young men increasingly living with their parents and disinterested in starting families will drastically reduce housing demand. She's basically saying that the rise of incels or the guys that won't leave their mom's basement is going to create a domino effect. Because most of the time, what you have is a child leaves house. Child gets, normally that you get an apartment or a townhome or a first place that you get into. Some people will have the ability to go into their first house. More power to you. But, rent, do that. Then child meets spouse. Spouse and them get married and they move into their first house. And that's how the housing market works. People live in their first house and they buy a second house when they have kids. Live in that house. Maybe they'll downgrade that house when the kids move out. Maybe downgrade one more time when they turn, they head off until their silver years. That's supposedly how the housing market is supposed to work. It has been absolutely just smashed lately. It doesn't work like that at all anymore. People aren't leaving their houses, especially older people. They're definitely not. They're not downsizing anymore because a lot of them that own their house and don't have a mortgage on it anymore, it's cheaper to stay there than try to move into a smaller house then.
Yeah, especially now. They'd pay the same thing for a house half the size.
Over the last decade, the number of young men living in their family home has been on the rise. Young adults are defined between the ages of 25 and 34. So that's not teenagers. That's 25 to 34 that are still living at home with mommy and daddy.
Mm-mm.
Whitney cited the U.S. Census Bureau stating that before the financial crisis, around 13% of men aged 25 to 34 lived at home. But since that, it has rose to a high as 22%. It's still sitting around almost 20% in 2023. It also means that young women have consistently been around twice as likely to leave their parents' home. Last year, they left about 12.3, but they are no longer getting married. They're no longer starting families, so there is no reason to buy that first family home. They're staying in apartments, townhomes, things like that. So basically, it's causing some sort of housing crisis, which I'm all for. I'm like, hey, let's continue this on. I need these houses to come down a little bit. I'd love to purchase a house. They do say, she does say also that we're heading towards a silver tsunami, which may be at a point which the aging boomers finally start to sell their homes, which will flood the market with inventory. She says that tsunami, though, is not looking like anything more than really kind of a tide. We'll see what the next couple of years bring and see if the economy bounces back.
I have a house for you.
Oh, yeah?
You may have to redo some flooring for some decomp stains, but yeah.
Yeah, it's I got to get an old priest and a young priest, though, at that point to get the spirit out.
Why? Why do you have to have two?
Always. If you're going to exorcise a house, you need an old priest and a young priest.
I didn't know that.
You've never seen The Exorcist before?
Yeah, but why do you need an old and a young?
It's always something to do with like the experience and then the youthfulness, like the ability to believe. Old priest and a young priest.
Well, I'm sure we've got listeners that we could... There's got to be a priest listener that we could... have come exercise the house. And then you could buy the house. And then there you go.
Yeah, but I would live in next door to you, wouldn't I? Like close.
Not next door.
But close enough, probably.
Probably. Yeah, you're right.
Do you think we have a lot of priest listeners? I have a hard time believing that one.
They're normal people.
Maybe a young priest, an old priest. You want another terrifying thing to think of?
Yes.
I know you don't have to worry about it, actually. I take this back because you do not eat any game meat, so you're completely out of this. You're fine. Go back to eating the chicken at the store that probably will kill you just as fast as this will at some point. But a study suggests that two men in Wyoming have died from chronic wasting disease that they got from zombie deer.
Okay. The zombie deer, was that where they have like extra eyeballs or a deformed head?
No, these are the ones that basically have wasting disease. You'll see them and they've got very mangy fur. They've got like weird bumps all over them. I don't know why these guys ate them.
They were easy to catch.
Yeah, but maybe they were in the early stages and haven't gotten that far. Most of the time, this chronic wasting disease, it's 100% fatal if you catch it. Well, for the deers, at least so far. It leaves deers confused, drooling, and unafraid of humans.
Oh, that was super easy. That wasn't even a challenge. Y'all cheated.
One of the victims was a 72-year-old man who suffered rapid onset confusion and aggression, as well as seizures, and died within a month.
Oh, no.
He was diagnosed with Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or CGD, a brain-wasting condition that has been compared to mad cow disease.
I was going to say, is this like mad deer disease?
Yeah, pretty much. It's kind of the same thought. You guys got to... I hate
stop
this.
Stop eating roadkill.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of venison. I like game meats. I think they're delicious, especially when you get it from a hunter who's had it processed. It's probably some of the best meats you can possibly can get. I think a couple listeners have texted in, probably roadkill. I'd like to take a guess. This is somebody that found one on the side of the road. It hadn't quite gotten to the bad stages yet, and they took it home and... there's a lot of states up north that you can do that, and it's like considered okay. I guess because it's cold enough that the deer get hit. As long as you pick it up, take it to a processing place, so you can take it from a true hunter. Get the deer. A good hunter probably gets two or three a year, and that's plenty of meat. They'll share it with everybody. If you got one, you know somebody that you'll get enough of it in your freezer. So.
Now, someone who does that, are they eating it like every day? I mean, how's it going to last that long?
You freeze it.
I mean, but are they, right? is there enough meat to have meat every day or every couple days from one deer
for a year? You get quite a bit of it off of there, yeah. Not for a year. You use it as a, I mean, some of them can if you really wanted to, but you use it like you would, you know, some night we're going to have steak, some night we're going to have venison. And there's also many different ways it can be processed. You can have venison jerky. You can have venison ground beef. Well, venison ground backstrap. You can have all different types of parts of it. It's delicious. Have you even ever had it before? Like, I knew. Yes. Okay, so it's not one that's just been like, I can't eat Bambi.
No, it was one of the mystery meats that I was fed. Yeah, I won't do it. No, mm-mm.
Sounds like there's more to that story.
There's a lot more to that story. We're done.
I was it's a mystery meat that I was fed, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. All right, so we won't. Let's go ahead and take a break. Up next, we have Movie Man Mike, who's going to tell us what you should probably be watching over the weekend. I think he's got some recap of Civil War, how it did. I got to ask him because I saw a lot of it. It did really well up north.
Yeah, exactly.
It did. No, it did very well up north. Not so much down south as from the numbers I saw. Also, I think they have Sunset Sasquatch movie that we asked about last week. He's got some updates on that as well. Plus, Quentin Tarantino, he keeps trying to talk about he's going to do his 10th and final movie, and he keeps backing out. So we'll see what he has to say when we come back. It's the Shannon Burke Show here on the Florida Man Radio Network. All right, we got Movie Man Mike. Hopefully, here Zoom decided need to update, so I'm trying to make sure that goes. Is
no audio.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, but we hear you.
Okay. Hold on. Mike, you hear anything?
No audio. I can't hear you. I can see you. I can't hear you.
All right, let's take that out and see.
I can see you. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right. Cool.
Good.
Dude, I'll do a little testing there.
Okay. Hey, next week, you're doing the remote on Friday. What's my deal? Thursday?
We'll talk with you. We'll see what it is. It's going to be a busy week, so we'll try to talk with Shannon on Monday and try to get a kind of a schedule out.
Okay. All right, cool.
I know kind of you got a bunch of stuff to go in, but I see this article coming out, and Quentin Tarantino, he cannot finish what his last movie is going to be. Apparently, he was going to work on this movie critic.
Yeah, that's at the top of the segment.
Okay, go for it.
I'm opening with that.
Yep, go for it. You're on.
Are we on?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you for that modest interest there.
Movie Man Mike. Yeah, you know you need that. You can listen to him. Okay. On the, you can check his reviews in the Epic Times, Newsweek. Am I missing any of them?
Newsmax.
Newsmax. Thank you. Wrong one. Definitely don't listen to it. And the Federalist. Thank you.
Federalist.com. Yeah. Yeah. Quentin Tarantino planned his 10th movie last year about this time, and it's going to be called The Movie Critic. And everybody thought it was going to be based on Pauline Kael, real famous critic from the 70s and 80s. He said, no, it's about this guy who wrote for a porn mag in L.A., and it was supposed to be played by Brad Pitt. He had the thing finished. They were going into pre-production, and this week he pulled the plug. He just said, I'm not going to do that. That's not going to be my last movie.
You think he just has cold feet at this point?
No, I don't, because he's gone through a number of these things, at least 10 of them. If you go to Wikipedia, you can find Quentin Tarantino's unrealized projects. It has its own Wikipedia page. And this has happened many times before. And I was under the impression that his last movie was going to be a Star Trek origin story.
Yeah, I heard that he was going to do an R-rated one. And
yeah, and that fell through. Everybody, all the hardcore Tarantino people are hoping the last movie is going to be Kill Bill 3.
I think most people do. I think they would much rather see him finish with one of his classic films, even if he is going to do a remake. I just think there is a little weird that he's gotten to. He's told everybody always before it was going to be number 10. It's going to be his last one. And now I think he's almost got a weird cold feet. Like he doesn't want that to be, he can't figure out what's going to be the last one.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't say, you know, never say never. That's not really a good idea. But I do understand his reasons for doing it. You know, a lot of old directors like Clint Eastwood is a great example. The last 10 movies he's made, one of them is okay. And they just make too many movies. Woody Allen's another one. Even though the last Woody Allen movie was very good, there's too much. I'd rather have quality over quantity. But I would love to see Kill Bill 3. Although secretly, I wanted to see what he had to say about movie critics.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do.
And he's, movie critics by and large have loved everything he's done. I don't think he's made a bad movie. There's most that I like more than others, but he's had a very good relationship with the critics. So right now, I'm hoping he does Kill Bill 3, because there was enough stuff left dangling at the end of Volume 2 that he could make a third one without any trouble whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't think that'd be an issue.
You and Shannon were talking about Rust, the Alec Baldwin movie, earlier this week. The principal photography on that movie wrapped on May of last year. It's done. It's in the can. They're in post-production now. It's been picked up by a distributor called The Avenue, which is a very young upstart distributor that had a couple of movies last year. I think I reviewed one or two of them. And the release date is yet unknown. And I hate to say this because I hate Alec Baldwin and I hate everything that surrounded this movie, but I think it's going to do good business just because people have this kind of, you know, looking at the traffic wreckage on the side of the highway. They want to look at the movie for that reason.
Yeah, I definitely going to think they're going to check that out just for that.
Fandango, which has owned Vudu for the last year and a half, is pretty much replacing Vudu for on-demand first-run outlets. Every week you hear me say Vudu, Prime, Apple. I don't think you're going to be hearing me say Vudu much anymore. It's going to be Fandango. And this is a good thing. Fandango, you want to find out where the movie is playing near you, at what theater, at what time, to get advanced tickets. It's great. But you can also go to Fandango and buy a ticket to watch at home. And it's less than the cost of going to a theater. It's about a $10 average per person. And they count, you know, 10 people as one person. So if you want to have your buddies over to watch a movie on Friday night at 7:30, you buy a ticket on Fandango, you get one play, and there you go. I don't know how good that is for the industry as a whole.
Heather, want to know, can you pause them?
I don't know. I would have to think you could.
Yeah, maybe just a full play. You get one full playthrough, but you can stop it and start it where you want to.
Yeah. Everybody does a beer bathroom run or whatever. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can. That'd be stupid if they didn't. That wouldn't go over too well. Aaron Taylor Johnson has been announced as the new James Bond. A lot of talk. It was going to be a black female. It was going to be Idris Elba, a black male, which I would have been very happy with.
Oh, Idris would have been great for it. I think he's one of the few people that I would have liked to have seen in that spot.
Yeah, but he's a little too old. Idris Elba's in his mid-50s now, and Aaron Taylor Johnson is in his late 30s. And he's a great choice. He's a fantastic choice. British-born. He played John Lennon in a movie called Nowhere Boy from 2009. He was the title character in the comic book spoof Kick-Ass. And its sequel. Another really disturbing movie called Nocturnal Animals from 2016. Bullet Train a couple of years ago with Brad Pitt. And he's the title character in the upcoming Spider-Man universe movie called Kraven the Hunter. I'm sure you're familiar with this character.
Yeah, this is one that he's probably going to wish he had passed that.
Well, anyway, he's the guy. He's a great choice. He's got, I think they're going to lock him into a 4 or 5 picture deal. He'll be Bond for the next 20 years. And like I said, he's a great choice. Okay, Civil War update. I heard you say right before the break that it's doing gangbuster business in the Northeast, but nowhere else. I didn't see those figures, but to me that makes sense. And I saw where they said 60% of the audience said that they were liberal and 40% said they were conservative. I don't know where they get these figures from. I mean, I don't see somebody standing outside a theater polling people.
I know, I always get that same thing. Either weird when they go, oh, we polled all these people. I go to the movies all the time. I've never seen anybody standing out there with a clipboard asking if they could ask me some questions about it.
I here's the reason. They say it's anti-Trump, and I disagree. If you look at the map, and you can find this map, this imaginary map on the Wikipedia page for the Civil War movie, and it shows this breakdown of the U.S. during this time frame. And the conventional U.S. states run from the Midwest all the way through the Atlantic seaboard to the Northeast. Okay, that's the loyalist states. Everything else, Florida, the Florida contingency, Texas, California, the Northwest, those are all of the warring states. Those are the ones who are closing in on the Capitol to take out the president. I don't think that contingency would be going in to take out Donald Trump.
Yeah, okay. The only part I've heard everybody say is it's a guy that declared himself for a third term. And, you know, of course, everybody says that if Trump gets back in, he's just going to declare himself king and never leave. So
that makes sense. But Trump has already only served one term and he's not even in a second term yet. So he couldn't serve three straight terms, even if he wanted to. This is the kind of movie like The Exorcist, where you go in and you take out what you want to. It's weird you mentioned The Exorcist before, the old priest, the young priest. They need the young priest in case the old priest dies,
yeah,
which
exactly.
Inevitably will, you know. So they make this thing ambiguous by design. And again, you will take out of it what you go in with. And I still recommend it highly. And it did great business last week. It was supposed to do $18 million and it ended up doing $24 million. Without any international box office at all, which starts this weekend. So we'll see next weekend again. I'll touch on it again. The reason I didn't see Sasquatch Sunset before last Friday is because it only opened in New York and L.A. last Friday. So I got a screener on Monday, Tuesday, I'm not sure. And I got to tell you, I liked it a lot more than I was expecting to. It was very bizarre. They're billing it as a comedy. And there is comedy in it. There is funny stuff in it. But it's mostly a drama. And it's about four Sasquatches living in Northern California. And you don't know when it's taking place until halfway through the movie. Is this prehistoric? When is this taking place? You don't know. And I like the fact that they wait that long until they reveal it to you. I mean, but this thing is very, it's very raw. They show Sasquatch's raw dog and it masturbating, full frontal male nudity with, a tent hut erections.
Do they, are they vocal? Is there dialogue or is it just
no
them
dialogue.
Grunting back and forth with each other?
Yeah, they grunt and they do whatever. And one of these Sasquatches does an F-A-F-O with a California mountain lion, which ends pretty ugly. And like I said, most of it's very dramatic, and some of it's very touching.
So does it almost play like a documentary of following a family?
Yeah. But these people are unrelated. There's three males and a female, and the female is played by Riley Keough, who is Elvis's granddaughter, who is a gorgeous, gorgeous woman, and you can only tell it's her in the movie because she's got female breasts, which are of course uncovered. So, I found it amazingly original. If for no other reason, it doesn't look like any other movie, with the possible exception of Quest for Fire, which is a movie that came out in the early 80s, which is about prehistoric man, 80,000 BC, where a tribe of humans loses fire. And at this point, you don't know what fire is, but you have it and it goes out and they have to go out and find it. And it was kind of like that, a lot of comedy of errors. Some caveman sex is in it as well. And there's no dialogue, grunts and whatever. And highly recommend that as well. And when we're done here, you can go to @MovieManMike, Movies from the Right, Twitter, and I'll have a list of everything we've talked about and where you can see them. But again, this was a much better movie than I was expecting. The trailer makes you think that it's kind of some, you know, slapstick, fall over the place kind of comedy, and it's not. It really isn't, and it's smarter than it would lead you to believe.
Is that playing full release now?
Yeah, that's now in full release everywhere. You can go see it in theaters. 4 out of 5 for me, 70% with critics, 62% with audiences. Our next one is called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And this is the latest from Guy Ritchie, who is on a roll. Guy Ritchie started out real strong in the 90s. And after he married Madonna, he seemed to make about 4 or 5 movies that really sucked bad.
Yeah.
But he's back on his top game. And this is a story that people are correctly comparing to Inglourious Basterds, Tarantino's movie from 2009. So much so that one of the actors in the movie also appeared in Inglourious Basterds. And the one thing about Bastards is it was a completely fictional story about Jewish soldiers being dropped into France to kill Nazis. This movie is kind of the same, but it's more like The Dirty Dozen, and it's based on fact.
Yeah, I think when I saw that trailer, I was going like, this seems like a really hyper-stylized Dirty Dozen type of thing.
It's more like that. You know, they have these soldiers that broke all kinds of rules. They're on trial, and Churchill kind of says, no, we're going to put him into the Special Forces unit, and we're going to have them go in and kill Nazis. They're not all Jewish. Nothing's made about their religion or anything like that. And it's a Guy Ritchie movie. It's got a lot of really slick banter, a lot of very violent action. I liked it. It's not as good as Inglourious, but it's still very good nonetheless. And Henry Cavill is in it. And there's a character, Ian Fleming, is a character in the movie. The real Ian Fleming, yeah.
James Bond himself.
And there's speculation, people reading between the lines, that the Henry Cavill character in this movie became the inspiration for James Bond. So, and this is the second movie. There was one last year called Operation Mincemeat that had the same Ian Fleming playing a character in the British intelligence, which is why these Bond movies are so great, because they're told from a guy who knows it from the inside out. So Guy Ritchie, it's on a roll. If you like his movies, if you like some really gross out violent warfare and snappy banter, it's right up your alley. 4 out of 5 for me, 71% with critics, 93% with audiences so far, and that is in theaters. Abigail, this is a new horror movie. And I have to say, you've been on long enough to know that most of the time I'm not really a big horror fan.
Yeah, you're not.
Not because they're too scary. It's because they're not scary enough. But in the past 5 or 6 months, especially this year, there's been some really good, scary horror movies out. And this one is no different. It's about this 12-year-old girl who's a ballerina, and she's the daughter of a mob boss, okay? And they get 5 kind of clueless stooges to kidnap her, 2 females and 3 males. And all they have to do is keep her in this house overnight, and they're going to get $50 million ransom. Pretty easy, right? And yeah. This woman comes in and explains to the girl who's shivering in her bed, don't worry, it'll be over soon. You know, we'll take you back home. And the girl says, I feel sorry for you, for what's going to happen tonight.
Yeah, I saw the trailer on this, and I thought they gave way too much of that movie away in the trailer, which I know that's kind of the thing nowadays. But I think that would have been a good twist of a movie, and they kind of gave that away way too early.
Well, the only reason I do mention it is because this takes place within the first 20 minutes of a, you know, 90-minute movie. And I don't see how you can make a trailer for this movie without revealing that the girl's a vampire. It's impossible to do that. And it's not spoiling it by letting you know she is a vampire, because there's a lot of stuff that takes place in the last hour that you don't see coming. And again, very bloody, very violent. Even though the 12-year-old is the lead performer, I would not recommend it at all for children. But again, a great year for horror. Abigail, it's 4 out of 5 for me. 82% with critics, which is great for a horror movie. And nothing yet from audiences. Oh, and there's another movie that came out last year called Megan. Did you ever hear of Megan?
Yes, I did. That was the robot one.
Yeah, and there's a Megan 2 coming out later this year. Kind of the same thing where you have this, you know, little girl character who turns into a vicious killing machine.
I'm ready for a Megan Chucky crossover.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good comparison. That's a really good comparison. Sweet Dreams. I have to tell you, I did not see this movie. It's Johnny Knoxville. And it's been described as Bad News Bears meets the 12-step program. Knoxville is a recovering addict. He goes to some halfway house to get clean, and he ends up coaching their interleague softball team, I guess, with other halfway houses. And Knoxville is said to be turning in a really good dramatic performance. And co-stars, very odd pairing here, Kate Upton and Jay Moore.
As an odd group.
Yeah, so don't go in expecting like a, you know, a Jackass movie. Evidently, Knoxville is wants to start doing drama. And from the reviews I've read, he does a pretty good job. But again, I had not seen it. 69% with critics, 86% with audiences, and that is in theaters. This is one that came out last month in theaters, and I didn't get a chance to see it or review it. It's called Knox Goes Away. And it is the directorial debut of Michael Keaton, who actually stars in the movie alongside Al Pacino. And it's kind of like the Bourne Identity. Keaton plays a guy named Knox, who is an assassin with Alzheimer's disease. He can't remember anything about who he killed or who he has to kill.
That makes a great assassin.
Yeah, exactly. No guilt, you know, no fuss, no muss. And for a first movie, and when you say, well, the guy's, you know, 70 years old, he's been making movies for 40 years. Why wouldn't he do a good job? You know, directing a movie is a lot different than acting in it, especially if you're doing both at the same time. And I was very surprised that it was good as it is. And it's not a Bourne Identity kind of movie. It's not a lot of action. It's more like a psychological thriller. And to play a stone-cold assassin who can't remember what he's doing or let alone what his name is a very intriguing kind of concept.
What was the name? One more time, Knox?
Knox Goes Away. 3.5 out of 5 for me, 61% with critics, 83% with audiences, and again, Fandango, Prime, and Apple. The last title we have for the week is called The Sympathizer. This is Robert Downey Jr.'s first project after winning the Oscar for Oppenheimer. And in it, he plays 4 different roles, all of them antagonists. And it's set in the waning days of the Vietnam War and the first few years of peace, with a North Vietnamese soldier being a spy in the South, and then he goes to the U.S. to become a citizen and still continues to spy. It was spotty in places, and there's a lot of good dark humor, and I got the feeling that Robert Downey Jr. was trying to play Peter Sellers in Dr. Strangelove, like he's doing 4 different characters, which he can do. He is a very good actor with a lot of range. But it's a, you know, it's an 8-part series on HBO, and it was a little too much movie. It could have been cut down to maybe 5 or 6 episodes. 8 is a lot of material to pack in.
Yeah, he always does try to seem to do a weird one after he does something that's like an Oscar winner. Then he always tries to do a weird one.
Yeah, and it was a brave move. I give him a lot of credit for doing it, that he didn't just come out and, well, time to do another Iron Man movie. He's done with the Marvel stuff. He's achieved a lot in his lifetime. He's you know, what would you call a legend. And he can pick and choose his own stuff. And I think he's going to do more character-driven stuff in the future, which is good at this point in his career. So, again, if you want to look at all the titles we've spoken about here, just go to at Movie Man Mike or Movies from the Right at on Twitter. And next week we'll be back with a couple of new titles, including Challengers, which is a menage a trois set in the professional tennis world.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you, Movie Man Mike. You can read his reviews. Try to get a list of The Federalist, Newsmax, and The Epic Times, right?
Correct, dude. Thanks. All right. And both you and Heather are crushing it today, but I think everybody's pleased.
Hey, appreciate it. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, man. Right, later.
All right. We're getting near the end. This has gone by way fast.
It has.
Awful grammar there. We're going to go ahead and we'll take one more break. Well, actually, take that back. We got two more breaks. I'll take this next break. You can come back. We're going to have remarks. We'll have a couple other things. We're just going to end this out. I've had too much fun. It's time to get out of here. All right. This is the Shannon Burke Show on the Florida Man Radio Network. This article here, and I immediately thought of Heather.
Oh no, bones.
Oh, it's bones.
Dead body.
Kind of. This kid. Let's say the kid. It was back in the 50s. Well, kind of give the background of the story is the experts have confirmed that a human jawbone that was mysteriously discovered in a child's rock collection once belonged to a United States Marine who died during his military service over 70 years ago.
How did he find it?
He was just collecting rocks. So,
but if he died overseas, right?
No, over 70 years ago.
Oh, over 70 years.
He died here.
Okay.
He actually died in California.
See, I'm telling you, there are bones under our feet everywhere.
U.S. Marine Corps, Captain Everett Leland Yeager was killed in a military training exercise in 1951 in July, according to news released this week by Rampeo College. There was a New Jersey institution where students performed tests on the jawbone and eventually linked it back to him. Actually, because they had a high school intern working on with him, that person now the youngest person to ever solve a genetic genealogy case. So good for them.
So wait, where were the rest of the bones? How did he just find the jawbone? Was this like a grave that was dug up by an animal?
Kind of.
So there was no vault.
They noted that the military exercise involved an airplane accident, although it could not provide more details than that. The accident left Yeager dead happened over California, and experts say his remains were recovered afterward in the state's Riverside County and buried in Palmyra, Missouri. It was assumed at the time that all the remains were recovered and buried, but decades later in 2002, a human jawbone containing several teeth was submitted to local law enforcement in northern Arizona, where a boy's parents believed their child had picked up the bone before mistakenly added it to his rock collection.
So were there teeth in it? Was it the full jawbone?
It was part of a jawbone.
Okay, so the kid knew it wasn't a rock.
I don't know how stupid this kid is. He could have thought it was a rock.
A rock with teeth, Mom. Look.
There was no samples in the government database that matched the bone. Their investigation remains tagged at Rock Collection John Doe, entered hiatus that would last another 20 years or so. They did go through it. They do believe they're not once quite sure how the jawbone ended up in Arizona since the accident took place in the area of California. But one theory is that a scavenger, such as a bird, picked it up and eventually deposited it during its travels over Arizona. So the guy had a bad plane crash. I guess they didn't account for a piecing, missing jawbone, and a bird took it to Arizona.
Okay.
Actually, a couple of bird stories in a row. The NFL draft's coming up here in Detroit, and there's going to be a bunch of people that are going to be saved of some bird poop, and that's thanks to Circe and Yahtzee, which are two falcons.
They had to eat bird poop or something?
No, they're using them outside where they're going to have the draft to scare away all the birds in the area. They're basically using the small birds of prey to come through and fly around and just basically scare off all the pigeons and other birds that would normally poop in the area. I guess it allows them to keep it. They're essentially serving as scarecrows. It allows them to keep the area a little cleaner.
That's nice.
And then out in Connecticut, they found two vultures. And these two vultures were having a bad time. The vultures, nicknamed the Dynamic Duo, were found unable to balance or stand. And they found out these two vultures were
drunk.
Drunk, yes, they were. They were literally drunk, unable to balance and stand, kept passing out in front of our eyes, and actively dying. We ran every test. In the end, they were too drunk to fly. Faculty said that the staff members at those at the Waterton Animal Control suspected the worst and were confused about what was happening to the two birds. Eventually deduced that the vultures were simply intoxicated and were not dying.
Fermented berries.
No, they believe they were dumpster diving, and they got into something that was fermented enough to cause them severe intoxication. The two birds were given plenty of fluids, tucked in overnight, and given a big breakfast when they regained their health, and they're doing fine now and released back into the wild.
Oh, those poor birds, but I bet that was funny.
Just two drunk birds. Couldn't have a Florida Man show without a Florida Man story on a Friday, and this one's quite the doozy. His Florida man's been arrested after he threatened to beat up one of his family members once he got his prosthetic leg in.
Was he going to beat them with his prosthetic leg?
Maybe. Maybe it's more just like, he's on the couch. He's like, once I get this leg, I'm going to get up and I'm going to beat you. A woman in Marion County called 911 after her nephew, 26-year-old Anahis Valamir Diaz, began becoming aggressive with her and her family members in the home. The two began arguing when he started screaming, stating that he was going to ram his car into hers and blow it up. Another family member stepped in to help mediate the argument, and all three stepped outside. I get maybe he probably hopped outside because he's on one leg. A second arguing soon with Diaz clenching his fist as though he was going to strike the other family member. When deputy spoke with Diaz, he said he did threaten one member of the family and did so because he's from New York and he's allowed to do that here. Deputies also were told by Diaz that he would beat the S out of a victim once he get his prosthetic leg in. I guess he's just become a recent amputee, so I guess he's not really...
He's grumpy.
Grumpy, yeah.
I would be too.
Yeah, and he's from New York. He can do that. Let's get to these remarks so we make sure we get to them.
Okay.
From the Florida Man Radio app and powered by Morris Family Farms and Morganic Meats. Get the app. Get your friends to get the app. Get your gram to get the app. I don't care if she's like 95 years old.
She'll love us.
She's still got a phone. She'll find it hilarious. You can go in there, show where all the podcasts are and all the other parts of the app, including that little bottom corner that has the microphone, which you can hit, speak for 30 seconds, and we can probably play those too.
Just don't cuss.
Mm-hmm. Hey guys, Shannon's not here. Shh, quiet, don't tell him. Let's all pitch in and get him a brand new juicer. Woohoo!
That's not a bad idea.
I don't think he wants to go back into juicing. He seemed like it was a phase that he was in. I think we all go through
and
that juicing phase.
Trauma.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Now we know not to use biometrics on our phone. Use a good password. Screw the cops. Beat it, beat it.
Yes, always. I know I'm, I think I use it, but you really, if you have stuff on your phone that you don't want the cops to know, a strong password will at least slow them down.
The facial recognition, and my kid was able to open it the other day.
That should make you feel good still. You're like, I'm still young enough that look, a kid's face can set it off. So there you go.
Thank you for turning that around.
Hey, y'all. Bug from Florida, Webster, Florida. I just want to let you know, show's going great. But you got to tell folks it's the Florida Man app. Download the Florida Man app on iOS, Android, Google, whatever you want your app from. Florida Man app. Once you do it, got a little microphone on the bottom right. It says open mic. Tap it. You get 30 seconds to talk. Say whatever you want. Florida Man app, y'all. Anywho, hey, Miss Shannon, hope he comes back soon. But y'all doing great. Keep it up.
He will definitely be back Monday. Thank you for that, Bug. You just did a perfect description on how to do it. You download it. iOS, Android, you've got it all.
Shannon, Easy, Heather, Brian from the bar in a bar, calling in from Fairbanks, Alaska this time. Last time I called you guys, I was in Scranton pissing on all the Joe Biden signs. Couldn't find any up here in Fairbanks, but just check and see if you guys need a couple Harley t-shirts from Fairbanks, Alaska. Be-do, be-do.
And he asked our sizes.
Yeah. He said, but I don't get one because I don't ride, so.
I don't ride either.
Yeah, to say,
you
probably should tell him, too. You can wear them. I wear a couple Harley shirts. I don't ride, but it's advertising for some of our sponsors we have as well.
I would love a Harley.
Yeah, it's Jerry Nadler. I want to get on that spark committee. Be-do, be-do.
I think my sister endorsed Joe Biden because she wants to get her hair sniffed by him. But unfortunately, I think she's not young enough. She's over the age of 10.
It's a good RFK Jr.
Damn, EZ, you just threw out a yippee. That's amazing. Great show today. Glad you guys took it over. Good for Shannon getting a day off. Andy from Sanford.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, again, he will be back Monday. He's just taking the day off. I don't know if he's going to be raring to go back on Monday as well. So you know how he doesn't...
news.
Yeah, he's still
news.
Doing a bunch of news, so.
Hey, yo. You guys are doing great. Going back to the retirement age, I'm 51, and I've told several people that I'll probably have to work a half a day on the day of my funeral.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're all getting to that point now. That part of the American dream is kind of not doing all that great right now. You're going to work for a while.
I hope you like your job.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with a grown child, a male, living with their parents. My son moved back home from college and didn't make $2,500 a month on rent. Instead, he saved for a down payment and just bought his first house. Don't be hating on those people that move back with their parents.
Not hating on the people that move back with their parents. And you also said, college son, there is the ability to fall back, but these are the people that are now 25 to 34. If you're 34 and you're still moving back with your parents and it's not an emergency thing.
And you're not in college.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that do. There is a nice fallback. If you have parents that you can do that, I've had to do it before. When I lost a job out in over in the East Coast there, but it was temporary. It wasn't a long-term thing. In fact, I didn't want to be there long-term. So there's nothing wrong with that.
You could not pay me to move back in with my parents.
But that's not the person that article was talking about. That's not talking about the entrepreneur that saved all his money, was able to put a down payment on a house, get out of there. This is talking about the kid at the bottom of the basement that, screaming for meatloaf from his mom, so.
I think you should buy that house, Easy. I can come and sage it and sprinkle some magic fairy dust and say some incantations, perhaps. Works like a charm.
Yeah, sage isn't going to get the job done.
Well, another liberal set himself on fire outside of the Trump trial today in New York City. Authorities arrived approximately 5 minutes too soon. Be-do, be-do.
he's still alive right now, currently, from what I understand. He's not going to live, but he's still alive at the moment.
Hey now, they say millennials aren't very tough. I'll tell you this, you don't see any boomers setting themselves on fire, do you? Be-do-be-do.
Nope.
Hey, Easy. I think we all need to say a little prayer for Liberal Larry. He done up and set himself on fire up there by the courthouse. I heard he's still alive, though, but let's pray for him.
You know, Michael, that crazy movie man guy made an understatement about how UEZ and Double H have crushed it today. My opinion is you've not only crushed it, but you made mashed potatoes and given us some good gravy too. Be do and be do.
That is my entire want in life, is to have someone tell me that I made good gravy.
And mashed potatoes.
And mashed potatoes, yes.
Thank you.
I have a plan. I have a house here in Orlando. It's expensive. Probably worth $730, $740, something like that. My plan is to sell this house and move to the Panhandle. Not sure where yet. Probably Crestview. And buy two houses. One to live in and one to rent out. And take out a mortgage on that second house I'm renting out and buy another house and start my American dream happening.
You should do the mortgage on the house that you live in so you can get the homestead exemption.
That's straight up part of the deal going on right there. You buy a house, you put another house, you buy, use that to rent out, to buy another house, to get another house, and you become a some sort of real estate mogul and you date a supermodel. That's the American dream right there.
All right.
All right, those are all our remarks for now and maybe possibly for the week. I think this story has got Shannon's heart right here. This is a 69-year-old retiree, and he has broken a Guinness World Record for drinking.
Drinking what?
Well, drinks. He's a 69-year-old retiree who visited 120 pubs in order to drink order drinks in 24 hours, breaking a Guinness World Record. David Clarkson, who was born in Britain but has lived mostly in Australia over the past 40 years, started his attempt with a drink at the Captain Cook Hotel in Sydney. Clarkson walked to 119 more establishments over the course of the following 24 hours, ordering a drink at each stop. This doesn't say that he drank them, though.
He ordered them. He probably had a sip or two.
It does say that the Guinness World Record adjudicator, Pete Fairborn, joined Clarkson for the first four and the final 4 hours of his attempt. Other witnesses accompanied Clarkson during the middle period of his pub crawl, collecting evidence for Fairbairn to review at the end of the day. Clarkson's attempt came to an end at the Sussex Garden Bar, where Fairbairn certified his record. He actually took the title from Australians Harry Kouros and Jake Lewerton, who visited 99 pubs in 24 hours. I don't know how he walked. What is this area that he walked to that had 120 pubs in walking distance?
Does it say where he was?
No, it was in Sydney, yeah, in Australia.
Australia. They got some partying going on there.
Yeah, and again, also, it doesn't say what he drank. like, if he took a shot at 119 shots, so he had to have just been like, I ordered a beer, took a couple sips, moved on to the next place.
Could he have ordered a water, or was it strictly alcohol?
It does not
anyway,
say.
Anyway, like, 120 drinks, period, is a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he's walking. It's 24 hours.
Sort of.
He paces himself.
That he's like, he's stumbling.
I would like to see the video of this and see if he drank a pint at every place, because then he deserves it.
Show me the video. Show me the proof.
Have you seen Hollywood? What they're calling Ozempic face?
No.
So look at a lot of the people that you can obviously tell. This article talks about Scott Disick and a couple other, Sharon Stone, people, Robbie Williams, people that have admitted to the fact that they have taken Ozempic for weight loss, which, you know, if it's good for you, it's good for you. I always argue that it's not designed for you for weight loss, so you're taking something you actually don't need. And it does seem to be causing some issues, and it's creating what's called Ozempic face. where because people losing the fat in their face faster than they are losing the in the rest of their body, it's giving them kind of a gaunt, sunken cheeks. See a loss of volume in the face. And when we lose fat in the face, we see the signs like the cheeks are more sunken in, more sagging skin, and general hollowing out of the features.
Which means more Botox.
I don't know if it would help with the Botox.
Yeah, I have no idea. I've never done Botox.
They do say that with even just weight loss, you see more lines, more wrinkles, and more deflation in the face as people lose weight than what they were when they were heavier and they're fuller. They're specifically talking about John Goodman, who you can definitely see that in his face. But he's also lost a ton of weight, so I'm not sure if it really makes too much of a difference. I see... If you look at the pictures, the one they had of Scott Disick, it looks like a drug addict because of how much.
He's always kind of looked like that, though, hadn't he? I mean, I know he's had weight gains and losses, but, like, I don't watch this, but I have seen him on that Kardashian show.
Sure. Don't watch it. Yeah, that's what you said.
No, I don't. But, like, I did. That's the only way I know who he is. And he's always kind of looked like.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of but drugs, I Googled, apparently.
I Googled. I thought what you were going to say was it gives them a bigger forehead because, like, every single one of these people have, like, the five head.
I think it does a little bit because it's the face is dragging a little bit because it doesn't have the weight holding up around the cheeks anymore. So you're going to get a little bit more on the forehead looking shinier and stuff like that. Another guy that did an incredible feat. This guy's name is Eric Decker, and he goes by the name Eric when he's online. And he's done a couple other wacky feats, including making the world's largest pizza. This guy's a YouTuber. He's always got to come up with the new crazy, wacky thing to do. This time, though, he flew every single U.S. airline in a week to see which one was the best. His first rule was he could not leave the airport system and had to remain at an airport or on an airplane. He was required to purchase the nicest seat each airline offered, and he rated each flight's experience on four components: price, comfort, service, and something that he called the X Factor. Some of the ones, Allegiant Airlines, he said it was ranked A tier for very clean bathroom despite only one ply toilet paper. Southwest Airlines, back in the main cabins of the flights, Decker, he basically said he secured a first row seat because of the lowest cost carrier's opening seating model, and he said that was best flight he'd ever got. However, a 4-hour delay and a $221 cost landed him only on a C for Southwest Airlines. Spirit Airlines, he hated. Actually, he gave it a B. He said the staff was clean, smooth. It was nice staff, but it just cost too much money because he had issues with ticketing. Delta Airlines, he had the Comfort Plus access to Delta's lounge access, vast variety of food and shower, and the onboard snacks and free refills. The airline merely made it to an S tier as well, but it cost $513.
So what was his X factor? Like, what was the deciding?
Something special about it. I like Southwest, it got bumped up because they gave him the good seat. He put Alaska Airlines as an E tier rating, though. He hates them, which we found out it's a good idea. Don't fly Alaska Airlines because the door comes off. All right.
All opinions are our own, not JVC. Yeah,
that's what it is. The views and opinions of the show are those of JVC Broadcasting, not those of its advertising or sponsors. I've heard it a couple times
before. Okay.
Are you ready to take this last break? Get on out here for the weekend.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe we've done an entire show. This has been so much fun.
It has been a blast. Let's go ahead and take this last break and we'll wrap things up. It is the Shannon Burke Show here on the Florida Man Radio Network. This.
All right.
You ready to get out of here?
Let's do it.
It's been fun. Thank you, Shannon, for letting me sit in, let the bosses give me a run so we didn't do a best of. And I hope you guys at least enjoyed most of it. I know a lot of people don't want to sit through and listen to another best of. So, I've had a blast today and it's been fun.
I love this. This is great.
I think you've done a great job over there. You've done great with all the other stuff. It's fun.
You've made Shannon proud.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I hope he's there listening, going, I can take more time off. You use Ubers?
No.
Nah. I don't even either. I don't know. I don't do Airbnb. I don't do Uber.
I don't like strangers.
I find it weird to get into somebody else's property. I know it's not supposed to. And a lot of people, that's their work vehicle, quote unquote. I don't know. I just found it weird. But Uber, they revealed their most weird objects that have been left in vehicles from this past year. I guess you can do, you basically can put in a thing like, hey, I lost this item in a vehicle. The best way to retrieve it is call the driver. Others, users can tap an emergency button to call 999. Select the trip in which you lost the item and scroll down to find lost item in the help menu. Some things that have been lost in there. A frontal hair toupee. I wonder who took that ride. A hot sauce and a breathalyzer.
I wonder if he noticed.
He was drunk. These are junk.
Okay.
Some of the things that... this person, I left a leaf in your car that's much needed.
A leaf of what?
Two containers with spiders in them. A personalized blanket with a picture of me and my dog.
Aw.
A small small skeleton prop.
That's
cool. Of a rat. And a poster of Hillary Clinton, because I know they need that. I like this one, though. A panty liner and $1,000. And they said that's all I can remember. They needed that panty liner back. The $1,000. That's second thing.
I just hope it wasn't used.
All right. Well, that's it for us for the week and for today. It's been a blast today. And like I said, Shannon will be back on Monday, ready to go, raring with a little vacation time in him. Starting us off on Monday is, of course, Bubba the Love Sponge, a man that I can't really talk bad about because I haven't hung out around him enough to talk bad about him like Shannon does. And then also the hilarious Don Miller follows him, and we follow Don correctly. Right after that, it is the Shannon Burke Show, and I am EZ, and we are out of here.